welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this, what is it, Thursday afternoon? Wednesday? I don't know. My computer's restarting, so I can't look where I normally will. Who knows? Who knows anymore what the hell's happening in the world? I do. I'll tell you all about it today. We got, obviously, the war in Iran continuing. Not a lot of big changes there, just everything getting a little bit worse. But don't worry, we've got a lot of other stuff beyond Iran to talk about. I'm going to do a deep dive on the UK, try to figure out what the hell is going on in that godforsaken island. We also have some terror attacks, potential Iranian sleeper cell activity here in America. There's also an interview that Brett Baer did with Larry Fink. I think we'll take a look at, see if we can't judge it appropriately. Just tons of stuff to talk about today. I'm going to take your calls as well. I have a special idea about the calls that we'll be taking and has to do with the imminent shutdown of InfoWars. Stay tuned for that. But we'll begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. It's Thursday, guys. I figured it out. All right, here it is, folks. Your Daily Dispatch for Thursday, the 12th of March, 2026. Suspect in Detroit area synagogue attack is killed by security, sheriff says. A suspect in an attack on a synagogue in the Detroit area is dead after ramming a truck into the building and being confronted by synagogue security, Oakland County Sheriff Mike Bouchard said. However, there are no reported injuries among the student or staff on site. And this was being reported at first as a shooting. It appears as though the attacker either didn't have a gun or didn't have time to get out a gun. So far, the story is that this truck drove right into the synagogue, was driving down one of the hallways when the driver was killed by not a local police officer, but one of the security officers at the synagogue, private security who'd been hired. And then the truck either had an explosive in it or caught fire because of the crash. And we're still, I'll show you a video of the sheriff giving a press conference on this in just a second, but we're awaiting any updates to that. We also have a shooting at Old Dominion College in Virginia. And that ended with the shooter dead as well. We have a name for that shooter. I'll bring you that in just a second. But all of these are making people think that perhaps the warnings about Iranian sleeper cells should have been paid a little bit more attention to. And we have statements from Trump about that, whether these are false flags, actually coordinated sleeper cell attacks, or just sort of independent extremists acting on their own volition. I don't know, but I know it was probably a mistake to A, let all these people in here, B, then start a war against them. That was kind of stupid, I think. I think that was a mistake. I think we should have maybe solved the first problem before we made the second. But, you know, I guess, you know, retrospect is always 2020, right? Meanwhile, four drones stolen from Fort Campbell. Army offers $5,000 reward. Investigators shared two photos of the individuals who may have been involved in theft where four drones were stolen from Fort Campbell. They're offering a reward of up to $5,000 as they search for whoever stole these drones. But again, in the heightened security atmosphere of Iran and the supposed sleeper cells, it's obviously a concerning thing to have happened. Meanwhile, in the Middle East, the war, of course, against Iran continues to expand and grow and accelerate, as well as the corresponding related, but not exactly the same, war against Lebanon. Iran war live. Oil prices soar past $100. New Supreme Leader says Strait of Hormuz should stay closed. Iran has stepped up attacks on oil and transportation facilities. The new Supreme Leader, Mujtaba Khamenei, issued his first statement in which he said the Hormuz Strait would remain closed. At least six tankers have been hit in the Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz. Brent oil prices are back to around $100 per barrel. U.S. President Donald Trump says the U.S. needs to finish the job. And the IEA says the war has caused the biggest disruption to global energy supplies in history. And in fact, we have news of some of the strategic reserves being emptied out for this elective and pointless war. At Ramlat al-Baida, a massacre on the beach, basically the Israelis have massively expanded the exclusion zone in Lebanon where they tell everybody to flee from. Millions of Lebanese people, hundreds of thousands of Lebanese people, I should say, at this point have fled their homes. Many of them are camping on a beach, having fled their homes, and then Israel bombed them.
I'm holding in my hand two compounds that are guaranteed to change your life. T3, pure atomic iodine, nobody else has it. It's next level. And ultramethylene blue, medical grade methylene blue. These two products together supercharge the mitochondria in the cells, clean out the body, and are game changers. Iodine is essential, meaning you die without it. The UN admits that most people that have cognitive disabilities is because of lack of iodine. You add ultramethylene blue to this, it supercharges everything. Ladies and gentlemen, T3 is now available. DallasTheStore.com, the very best iodine that we know of that exists. There may be better. We'll adopt that if we can. But this is the best for sale we found, and we have the best medical grade ultramethylene blue. Get yours now, right now. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off. It funds the InfoWar, but more importantly, it is a game changer. If you don't take my advice and try this, you're insane. All you got to do is try it. You'll be blown away. Take action now. DallasTheStore.com to get T3, now available, and methylene blue at DallasTheStore.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Annihilate.
Welcome back, folks. This is The War Room. News continues to break. Minutes ago, we've got a new video of Benjamin Netanyahu prophesying the return of the Messiah. It's not going to be next Thursday, he says. So if you got something to do on Thursday, that's fine. You can do it. The Messiah will not be coming on Thursday. I think I'm kidding. I'm not. That's literally what Benjamin Netanyahu just said. Yes, I'll have to show you the clip in just a second. We have a lot of videos to get to today, and so I'm going to try to get to as many of them as humanly possible. I think we'll start with the video I just put in there, the statement from the sheriff in the Detroit area that was handling the Detroit area attack on the synagogue. Suspect in Detroit area synagogue attack killed by security, sheriff says. We have a press conference from the law enforcement in the Detroit area. Now let's go to that.
He drove in through doors with a vehicle.
There was only one person in that vehicle?
That's what it appears at this point.
What do we know about this fire?
Something ignited in the vehicle. That's a work in progress. We're through an abundance of caution clearing the vehicle for IEDs or any explosives. We've got a significant number of bomb dogs on site, bomb techs on site. And all of that's going to be done to check the boxes. We have deployed resources all across the county, just in case, out of an abundance of caution, that there may be a secondary site. But we don't have any information at this time to believe that. So we want people to take a breath. No one was hurt. We're on top of it. The chief and his team got here fast. Everything that was supposed to happen, happened. Security did their job, and then the responders did theirs.
Was it a Michigan vehicle?
Sheriff, what did the call come out as?
All right, so there's just a little bit more details. So, yeah, it appears as though it wasn't a shooting per se. It was, although the guy, I guess the guy may have had a gun. We don't know that yet. But apparently the truck fire that happened either because of the truck crashing or there's rumors that there was some sort of explosive device in the car that either exploded or caught fire. But they're saying that the suspect who was killed by the private security in the synagogue was burned beyond recognition. So they're having trouble identifying him. The situation, the sheriff's department says law enforcement responded to an active shooter situation. They said a man drove through the door of the building and down a hallway. Two law enforcement sources told CBS News the suspect rammed the vehicle into the synagogue, then exited the vehicle with a rifle and was then shot by synagogue security, though Bouchard would not say how the suspect died. No students or staff were injured in the incident, Bouchard said. We've accounted for everybody we believe was in the building at the time, Bouchard said. Now, this happens on the same day as a shooting at Old Dominion University in Norfolk, Virginia, according to Nick Sortor. The shooter is named Muhammad Jallo, a former Army National Guardsman arrested in 2016 for providing material support for ISIS. So, I hate to laugh, but I feel like we could have seen this one coming. I feel like the man had a decade after which he was convicted of giving material support to ISIS to, I guess, stew and seethe in his hatred for America before finally letting it loose on a bunch of innocent children. Why is somebody convicted of supporting ISIS walking free? Nick Sortor asks. Jola is a naturalized U.S. citizen from Sierra Leone, traveled overseas multiple times attempting to join ISIS. He was convicted in federal court and released from federal prison in 2024. He should have been in Guantanamo Bay. The shooter is now deceased. Good riddance. Tell you what, if somebody from Sierra Leone comes to our country and then tries to join ISIS, let's just send them back to Sierra Leone. I think I've solved that problem pretty expeditiously. Expediently. Why was he here? What? Why was he here in the first place? Why was he allowed to stay here? Why is he an Army National Guardsman? Why do we have Army National Guardsmen from Sierra Leone? They're trying to join ISIS. You're telling me he came to this country, we trained him in military tactics, gave him a rifle, then he tried to join ISIS, and we just let him go? We just arrested him, convicted him of joining ISIS, trying to join ISIS, wagged our finger and said, get out there. Go ahead. You're free to go. Don't do it again. Don't try to join ISIS again. I mean, I shouldn't even be making light of this because he's opened fire at an American university, but it's like, there's probably like a million of these types of people running around, which they should all be arrested and sent back to wherever the hell they came from. Problem solved, folks. Or we can just keep dealing with this forever. And this is him being hauled off. So he was killed during the attack. But it seems almost like an everyday thing at this point with all of these people that we've welcomed into our country, bringing their psychotic blood feuds from wherever the hell they came from to here and making our lives miserable. We'll stick with Iran right now, but we're going to talk about how this is happening in the UK to a degree that is truly shocking and unbelievable. But the latest on the Iran war is that it continues to not go so well. Tel Aviv continues to get bombed to smithereens on a nightly basis. U.S. intelligence says Iran government is not at risk of collapse, say sources. U.S. intelligence sees no imminent collapse of the Iranian government. Recent intelligence reports are consistent. Iranian Kurdish militias are short of fighters and arms. U.S. intelligence indicates that Iran's leadership is still largely intact and not at risk of collapsing anytime soon after nearly 2 weeks of relentless U.S. and Israeli bombardment. According to three sources familiar with the matter, a multitude of intelligence reports provide consistent analysis that the regime is not in danger of collapse and, quote, retains control of the Iranian public, said one of the sources, all of whom were granted anonymity to discuss U.S. intelligence findings. Again, the actual upshot of our attack on Iran has been previously dissident factions within Iran have pledged loyalty to Iran. Like, there were factions of ethnic minorities that operated sort of as lawless gangs and you know, terrorist factions within Iran. And they're putting out videos saying, we stand with Iran, you know, like, and hey, maybe it might just be cynical on their part. Like, they might just see this as a chance to, hey, let's wipe the slate clean of all the crap that we did before. We're going to fight for you now, and then everything's cool, right? Like, maybe that's why they're doing it. I don't know, but they are doing it. So, what did you expect? So, what did you expect to happen? I mean, can somebody answer this question for us? Somebody in the Trump administration just honestly come out and tell us what you thought was going to happen and what's happening now? Because things are not aligned, obviously. Obviously, they didn't expect to be 2 weeks into the conflict with the Iranian government stronger than ever, the Ayatollah replaced with somebody even more extreme, Tel Aviv being bombarded on a regular basis, every major billion-dollar radar array in the area that we installed shattered to pieces. I mean, this wasn't what you thought was going to happen, did you? Was this the plan? This was the plan? Okay, there's only two options. Either this is what you wanted to happen, in which case, what the hell? Why? What is the point of this? Or you didn't intend for this to happen, in which case, we need to know what you thought was going to happen, so we can move forward, try to correct the mistakes that you made. And again, like, people, I even think people are, like, sincerely believing that, like, it's going really well. But, like, I'll read a message here, and it's just from, like, a friend of a friend, let's just say. And, you know, an Army guy who just sort of loves what's going on. And he says, At this phase of the operations, the IADS has been completely destroyed. The next phase should be total destruction of all HDBT sites, all C2, and all leadership. This is all pre-planned, all as deliberate targeting, using B-1s and B-52s. It's when you hear about the big bombs going off. So in other words, it's like, nah, this is all like according to plan. Like first you take out these sites, first you take out the highest level stuff, then we're moving to lower level stuff. Now that we have air superiority, then we can go in with the really big bombers that aren't very maneuverable. So you can't do it if you expect a lot of air defense. But now that we've taken care of that, now we can bring the big bombers in, drop the really big bombs and do the real damage. And so my response to that is just like, okay, and then what? Okay. What next? What after that? Okay. So you have, in a very sophisticated and deliberate and strategic fashion, degraded and destroyed Iran's ability to exist. What's next, though? There is no conclusion to this, short of installing a puppet from a regional actor like the Kurds who can move in and take it over, which in and of itself, again, is just replacing one ethnic faction with another. Like, it's not solving any problems. I guess there'll be loyal puppets of Israel and America, but we've seen how that can go. And it's going to be strife. It's going to be civil war. There are going to be factions that don't want to give up. And that's the best possible scenario. The only other option is boots on the ground invading. You cannot overthrow a country with air strikes. It's just not possible. Do you know how I know this? You want to hear my just perfect argument for this? You cannot have a disagreement. Gaza. Y'all remember Gaza? Do you remember a little place called Gaza where they are still bombing to this day? Where they still can't send Israeli soldiers in without getting hit by Hamas? Where Hamas still operates and is armed? A 25-mile square strip of landlocked desert with no mountains? They still haven't taken Gaza. It has been 2.5 years of saturation bombing. What do they think is going to happen with Iran? So I will just keep saying that every day until it's just like Iran is a completely shattered mess and we're still here 20 years from now. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. But, like, I think some people are genuinely like, wow, this is – they're, like, impressed. They're, like, blown away at how, like, good our military is at taking out targets. And it's like, okay, but why? To what end? For what reason? In service of what strategy? Like, okay, I bet I could blow up a lot of people too if I had the same equipment. I don't see it as that impressive. I don't know what's so impressive about systematically bombing a country over and over again for no reason, killing a bunch of innocent people. What am I supposed to be like pumped up by this? Man, America's so strong. We're so cool. Yeah, I guess if you're into like, you know, massacres and slaughter, I don't know. I don't see a lot of people out there cheering on and being impressed by the incredible skill of Elliot Rogers, right? Oh, wow, the super, super well-armed faction is raining death on the unarmed faction? Pfft, America, like, we're so cool. It's just ridiculous, utterly ridiculous. So, again, I think, like, a lot of people, I don't get it. I don't get the mindset. But it's like, okay, I guess you know the initialisms, right? You know the code words. So I guess it's good. Well, you don't understand. They're bombing the ACBCs and next they're going to hit the HB1s. And only after that can the B1s and the B52s really bring the bunker busters. Okay. And then the children will die. What are we doing? I'm sorry. What? And then we'll kill enough children that the Iranians will welcome us with open arms and we'll have a freedom loving coalition of democracy there. Well, I'm sorry. What are we doing exactly? Since launching their war, the U.S. and Israel have struck a range of Iranian targets, including air defenses, nuclear sites, and members of the senior leadership. The Trump administration has given varying reasons for the war. In announcing the beginning of the U.S. operation, Trump urged Iranians to, quote, take over your government, but top aides have since denied that the objective was to oust Iran's leadership. What are you talking about? That's the craziest sentence I've ever heard. Craziest paragraph I've ever read. In announcing the beginning of the U.S. operations, Trump urged Iranians to take over your government, but top aides have since denied the objective was to oust Iran's leadership. What do you mean the objective was not to oust Iran's leaders? You killed all of them. What do you mean that wasn't the objective? Like, this is what I mean. It's like, okay, how many layers of insanity can we have in like two simple statements? And like, how funny, the reason I'm laughing is because it's just like, hey, you guys should take over your government. And you say that just after systematically killing every member of government. You guys should go. You guys should go take the leadership position. Don't worry about the gun pointed at your head. Just, it's your turn. You go take it over. You can trust us. We're America and Israel, the most trustworthy nations. So he's urging Iran to take over their government, the government that he just killed. But that's not an official stance. But neither is killing the government, which we actually did. So I'm just trying to think of other situations where you can do something and then say, that was not my position. Like, you can actually go out and do something and then go, that was not my objective, actually. Actually, my objective was never to step on your foot. I just happened to deliberately do it multiple times, but that was never my objective. So I am forgiven. Like, I don't know what we expect to happen next, but that's fine. Okay. So it was never the objective to oust Iran's leadership. We just accidentally murdered all of them. In addition to Khomeini, the strikes have killed dozens of senior officials and some of the highest ranking commanders in the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, an elite paramilitary force that controls large parts of the economy. Still, the U.S. intelligence reports indicates that the IRGC and the interim leaders who assumed power after Khomeini's death retained control of their country. Probably greater than they did before. Because again, I mean, just, it's like our actual aims aren't even enunciated. They're never even actually said out loud. The aims that we claim to have are in direct, dichotomous opposition to the things that we're doing. So it's still going like this, and there's no sign of it changing at all. And perhaps the craziest part of all of it is that we are actually getting less than the first war on terror. I'm like shocked that this is the real world. I cannot believe that we're not in some sort of Black Mirror parody of reality, but we don't even have weapons of mass destruction to point to. We don't even have a regime that we're trying to overthrow. And the excuses that they're using in sending us to war are the exact same pointless, meaningless phrases, the catchphrases, the slogans that have killed a million or more people over the last two decades. And they're doing it again. Go to clip 27 here. And I just want you to watch this woman's facial expression. I want you to really study the expression on her face. There are certain universals when it comes to human expression. And I think it'll be easy to read her face. Maybe we'll have to pause it, but let's just watch first. Clip 27. Remember, they're not giving you weapons of mass destruction. They're not predicating this on a giant terror attack that brought down two buildings in New York City. They're not trying to overthrow a regime and bring about regime change, to bring democracy to a region. We have gone to war in Iran, and we have not been given a reason. And in lieu of logical, patriotic, or moral reasons, we are given the most flaccid and pointless slogans that we've heard 10 billion times in our life. Let's watch.
Iowa, out of the Midwest. You know, people are split on this, but they understand the threat to the homeland. And if we want to protect Americans here, we have to send our servicemen abroad.
And Senator, you also...
We have to fight them over there so we don't have to fight them over here. Believe it or not, folks, they are actually still claiming that. No, I mean, I guess I shouldn't be surprised. The climate change people are still claiming the ice caps are melting. It's just terrifying. I just feel like I'd like to wake up now, please. I feel like I'm in a nightmare, bad dream. I cannot believe where we are in 2026. Through everything we've been through, I feel like I don't know. There's not even a thing to compare it to, because it alone is simple enough. We are in the year 2026 going to war. We are in war in the Middle East. And they're saying, so we have to stop their weapons of mass destruction and stop them over there so we don't fight them over here. And it's just like, what do we do? What do we do about this? This is crazy. I was going to say, it's almost like I'm sitting here going, wait, they're saying there's a new virus out of China and we need to lock down? No, wait, no, we did this already. No, we went through this. This is the problem when you don't tar and feather your politicians when they try to do things to you. This is the issue. This is the long-standing issue. This is why we should have hung the Bushes for treason. We would have prevented this if we would have charged them with treason, if we would have treated the war on terror, the wars on terror, the last several decades of American foreign intervention, killing a million people, wasting trillions of dollars, all predicated on knowing blatant, deliberate lies. We should have charged those people with war crimes, charged them with treason. And only after having been convicted by a jury of their peers should we have carried out the due punishment for traitors. Because then we wouldn't have to worry about this. Like, this is the problem. This is why we need to punish the people who did COVID. Or we need to punish the people that did the Russiagate conspiracy and all this stuff. Hell, let's go back and punish the war criminals for the first couple of Iraq wars. Like, I feel like we need we've been talking about Nuremberg 2.0 for COVID. I think we need a Nuremberg 2.0 for the Middle East wars. And I think only when everybody involved, Netanyahu at the front and center, are tried, convicted, and given exactly the same punishment as the Nazi leadership at Nuremberg, only then will the world be able to heal and move on. And then we should implement the exact same strategy that was implemented against Nazi Germany. By which I don't mean that, you know, you should rape 90% of the women and starve 12 million of them to death. I don't mean we should treat them that brutally. But in terms of the educational program that was implemented on Germany, I think we need to somehow systematically through all of society curriculum weed out and destroy this mindset, this neocon mindset that keeps getting us into the same war over and over again. We've got to do something drastic, dramatic. Now, if we can bring up clip 27 and just play it, and just at her, the last, like right when she finishes talking, pause it for me. Let's watch here.
Out of the Midwest. The same clip. You know, people are split on this, but they understand the threat to the homeland. And if we want to protect Americans,
she's trying to sound sincere and heartfelt,
we have to send our servicemen abroad.
And pause. There's the look right there. There it is. I'm not like a facial, I'm not one of these lie detector people. But you can look at her face, the eyebrows up in the middle, the pursed lips. She looks like terrified. Like, she looks like she is lying. She looks like she's lying. I'm not a body language expert. I think the woman in the middle, I think her face could be right next to the label liar. Here's how you detect a liar. I'll illustrate it on the other side. Stay with us, folks. This is important.
My people perish for lack of knowledge. That's what the Bible tells us. Another way to say it is, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. God has given us compounds in nature that aren't just important, they're vital, they're essential. If you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you die. You don't have water for 4 or 5 days, you die. You don't have food for a month, you die. And why is that? Because there's nutrients in the food you need that are essential. Well, iodine is one of the essential nutrients. We have massive shortages of it in our depleted soils. Now, I have a new CIA declassified document I'm going to hit here in just a moment. But first, I want to show you a few headlines. UN study, 2 billion people suffer from vitamin mineral deficiencies, particularly iodine, the number one cause of cognitive disabilities in the world today. Here's another one. Salt Smarts how iodine has increased America's IQs. Starting in the 20s, we had super low IQs like iodine. They put it in 15-20 point increase. My point is, this is a known fact. It just got declassified 2 weeks ago, CIA Operation Artichoke, in the 50s. They said, we've been tasked by the big tax-free foundations, the Rockefellers and Carnegies, to dumb down the American people. And we're going to put poisons in the food, the water, and the vaccines to dumb them down to make them more manageable. Absolutely incredible. So right here, ladies and gentlemen, I have taken a few drops of our new T3, even better than X2, pure atomic iodine, and mixed it with our medical-grade methylene blue. Both of these supercharge your cells, clean out your body, and counter the effects of the things now being admitted by the CIA. That fluoride calcifies the pineal gland and jackets your cells where they cannot transmit. Now, I've been telling you this for decades. So they have major studies, but now here it is. CIA declassified research. The human body is a liquid crystal that is literally transmitting and receiving a transceiver. And what does fluoride do? It literally blocks that. What goes in and strips that out? Iodine and methylene blue, they act in different ways. So this is information that the bad guys not want you to know. Also in the CIA document, they admit that most cancer is microscopic worms. There's hundreds of species that get in and colonize your body, amoebas, and eat your breast, your liver, your brain, you name it. And then they call it a tumor and cancer, but they're just areas of your body that have been chewed out. Now, you've seen us with countless doctors and scientists on talking about this. Not all cancer is this, but the majority of it from studies is, and they are again telling you that you just got to die. And if you've got an infection of parasites in your brain or whatever, if they hit it with radiation, it kills the parasites. But the radiation also kills your regular cells. Turns out the majority of people in the world have one form or another of parasite. Here's the Daily Mail. CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document. The potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. We've talked about this for many, many years. We are totally vindicated again. And right now, we finally have the original pure iodine back, but even stronger, now known as T3. The original X2, but even better, at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, T3 and what it does for your body is amazing. So for a limited time, you can get T3, our new iodine, the very best ever, at thealexjonesstore.com if you're a VIP member for 50% off, regular customers 25% off at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds the operation, total win-win. Now, methylene blue, you fill in 30 minutes on average. Iodine takes about 2 weeks to kick in to get the full effect, but it is just as amazing. You are insane if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get our Ultra Methylene Blue and the new T3, that's even better than the next two. The same formula, but stronger. Exclusively available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you so much for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, folks. We're talking about the war against Iran and Lebanon. And I want to go to a video here. It's a little bit longer. Clip 22. It's not normally the type of video I'd play because it's making a pretty, like, hardcore prediction about nuclear bombs being used. And I'm not trying to be the boy who cried wolf, right? But I think if you listen to the reasoning, and when you hear how he's laying out the facts that we know and everything factual the guy mentions, I can't help but, I mean, I know it's true. And so the conclusion he gets to, I can't help but think has some pretty good credence to it. And I'll show you more clips to illustrate why. But I think this reasoning is terrifying but accurate. Let's go to clip 22 here.
Could we be witnessing the first nuclear strike in modern history? I need you to listen carefully to what I'm about to say, because the indicators coming out of Western, Iranian, and Arab media in the past 24 hours, when you connect them, they all point to one terrifying possibility. Something massive is coming, and we need to understand what it is. Let me walk you through this step by step. First, the mystery that's been puzzling observers. Why have Israeli warning systems been failing? Why are Iranian missiles getting through the Iron Dome and hitting deep inside Tel Aviv? Here's what we now know. Iran with Russian intelligence support, Chinese satellite guidance through the Beidou network, and advanced targeting systems has accomplished something critical, something Washington and Jerusalem never anticipated. They've destroyed a significant portion of the early warning radars for Thaad and Patriot systems across the Gulf. These were the eyes that detected Iranian launches and warned Israel before interception. Now those eyes are gone. Israel is effectively blind, and the Israeli military can't send warnings to civilians. Combine this with the heavy media blackout on damage inside Israel, and statements from British and Australian politicians about legal penalties for filming destruction in Tel Aviv, and you realize the situation is far worse than officially acknowledged. Second, the Revolutionary Guard has announced striking over 200 strategic targets and American bases. Reports suggest America is now relying more on Asian bases and aircraft carriers. What does this logically mean? The American presence in the region has taken a hit far larger than media reports admit. This is a catastrophe for Trump, who still hasn't figured out how to sell this to the American public, already deeply opposed to this war. Third, because of these unacknowledged losses and severe ammunition shortages, America and Israel have shifted to targeting Iran's critical infrastructure. Yesterday they destroyed a desalination plant on Keshem Island, over 30 Iranian oil facilities, caused environmental disaster and acid rain over Tehran. Iran responded by hitting the Bazan refinery in Haifa, infrastructure targets across occupied territories, with devastating cluster munitions. Fourth, who suffers most from all this? The Gulf states. Because every strike happens over their territory, every American base they allowed for protection now threatens them. Senator Lindsey Graham, close to Trump, just demanded Gulf states intervene directly against Iran, said America won't defend them alone. This is exactly what Trump and Netanyahu want. It's why Mossad and CIA have conducted dozens of false flag operations, hitting Gulf facilities and blaming Iran, to drag Arabs into destroying each other, clearing the way for Israel's greater project. Fifth, and this is where it gets truly disturbing. American generals are telling officers this is a religious war, Armageddon, that they're accelerating Christ's return. This isn't rhetoric. Over 110 complaints have been filed by officers refusing to fight for religious objectives. I'll source this in comments. Sixth, Gulf states are waking up. Qatar officially announced it won't join any war against Iran. Saudi Arabia maintains restraint. UAE businessman Khalaf Al-Habtour has been posting direct condemnations of American intervention, saying Gulf states reject wars that don't serve their interests, and that American bases meant for protection now threaten their security. He said it clearly, "We don't need your protection. Just keep your ears away from us." A man in his position doesn't say this alone. So where are we? Iran is resilient, delivering devastating blows to Tel Aviv, which by some accounts now resembles Gaza internally, and causing unacknowledged heavy losses to America. If this continues, it destroys Trump's popularity, isolates him, and guarantees prosecution under Epstein cases. It destroys Netanyahu's political future. They need an unconventional solution, and there are only two options. Option 1, troop insertion 2, seize Iranian nuclear sites and extract enriched uranium. Nearly impossible. Option 2, non-conventional weapons, tactical nuclear bombs. These aren't like strategic nuclear weapons with wide effects, they're limited to specific areas. And this possibility is increasing, especially with rhetoric and American media preparing for such a historic event. Some prominent American media figures have stated Trump wants to be the president who dropped a nuclear bomb. Given his personality, his love of spectacle, his need to attach his name to unprecedented historical events, this isn't far-fetched, this is Shadow Archives. We don't do fear-mongering, we do pattern recognition, we connect what others won't. If you've followed this far, you understand what's at stake. Share this, follow for updates, because the next 48 hours could redefine everything. Shadow Archives, the full picture.
So again, I think when he talks about the damage that's been done to American bases, the damage that's been done to Tel Aviv, I mean, he's exactly right. And just taking this again from what I've been saying since 2024, which was, well, really since 2023 and shortly after the Gaza attacks, was that Israel was betting it all on taking Iran. That they put their entire reputation on the line, killing the people of Gaza in a way so brutal, so horrific. I mean, they knew that their reputation wouldn't recover. They didn't care. They thought, we'll burn the reputation, we'll burn the goodwill of the world, and as long as we take Iran, it will all be worth it. But they basically bet their lives on this. So, like, they're not going to give up. It's not an option for them. Because they aren't thinking in terms of weeks or months. They're thinking in terms of decades. And they understand that they have just put a hardcore time limit on America's, or, you know, Israel's current method of existing, right? There is a hardcore deadline now, because within 10 to 15 years, American support for Israel will have absolutely collapsed and will never come back. They understand that there's no PR campaign that can undo what's happened to Gaza. They understand that fully. They're fine with that. It doesn't matter as long as they can get Iran. If they can get Iran, if they can be uncontested in the region as a superpower of their own, you know, accord, then they don't need America anymore, and the support here being gone doesn't actually matter. Actually, it's kind of a good thing, because then you have an excuse to say, gee, it looks like America is anti-Semitic. Guess all the American Jews have to move to Israel, join us over here, and then we can go to war against America because it's so anti-Semitic and you have to die. So in that frame, you know, with that understanding, they're not going to give up on Iran, which is why it's so bizarre and insane that there's not any better war aims. That I don't think they'll just be satisfied with, okay, Iran is, you know, not as functional as it was before. I think they need it like completely wiped off the map. And I'm not the only one saying this or noticing this or seeing the sort of inevitability that we're headed towards. Because, and I know right-wing politicians in America tend to speak hyperbolically about this stuff anyway. But these are also the people with the ability to carry out these policies. Let's go to clip number 24. This is Lindsey Graham talking about what should be done in this case to Gaza. But do you think he feels any differently about Iran? He might hate Iran more. Here's Lindsey Graham saying what he thinks should be done to Israel's enemies.
We do in World War II. Did we think one minute about starving the Germans? Did we bomb every city into smithereens? So this
you
is a war.
No, October 7th to World War II.
Yes, I am. This is an absolute existential threat to the Jewish people. Mm. What happened on October the 7th was 1,200 people were slaughtered, raped, and murdered and filmed by radical Islamists who would kill every Jew if they could to the world. If you don't understand this is a threat to Israel,
and then
survival,
they flattened Gaza.
Just flatten it. We flattened Berlin. We flattened Tokyo. Were we wrong to drop an atomic bomb to end the Japanese reign of terror? Were we? So my view, if I were Israel, I would have probably done it the same way. Without military victory, there is no hope of breaking radicalism. We flattened Germany. We flattened Japan.
How many Americans
Wait
believe
a minute.
This?
Out of that, we
the way that, how many Americans think the way that you do?
I think most Republicans think the way I do.
Even young ones.
Yeah, you're just out of touch if you don't understand Republicans when it comes.
I mean, what else is there to say? I mean, the man is literally just like a cartoon villain. Like he looks like how Hollywood would portray him. Like he is central casting villain, bad guy, evil dude, demon in a pasty pale disguise. Looks like a dog. I mean, it's just like the irony, of course, of being like, if you want to get rid of extreme, you know, these people are extremists, so they should all be murdered. Every one of them. The kids too, of course. They're extremist. Do you know how extreme their views are? They should all be turned to radioactive dust, okay? Because of how extreme they are. I'm the reasonable one. All I want to do is vaporize all of them. They're the crazy ones. It's insane. These people are genuinely insane and dangerous. I don't know what else there is to say. Was it a good thing? And by the way, the weird thing is like, was there 1 minute of thought? Yeah, we kind of agonized over it for like a long time, and really still, like, even after choosing to drop it, were very nervous about the moral implications of what we had just done. Like, thank God there weren't people like Lindsey Graham running our country back during World War II. Thank God our people had some sort of morals and scruples. And by the way, the really horrible, damaging stuff we did to Germany that, by the again, was totally unwarranted, totally unnecessary, totally not strategically necessary, like, whatsoever. And we firebombed, which, if you understand, it means, like, that's not just like you drop bombs with fire. It means, like, you drop so many bombs and the fire gets raging so intensely that it is, like, self-perpetuating. It's where you get, like, the fire tornadoes, and it's, like, the term firestorm, right? It's something else. It actually creates, like, vortexes because of the insane heat that is, like, melts steel. Like, it gets incredibly hot, more than just regular fire. That's what we did to, like, Dresden, right? It's just like a civilian population. The UK firebombed Dresden, killed 100,000 people in a single night. And by the way, that was totally hidden and secret and kept from the British government because it was so shameful, and the British people would have been so outraged that their government had been engaged in such a catastrophic crime against humanity that it was hidden and disguised, and nobody knew about it until, what's his name? David, who's the writer? I'm totally blanking on his name. But he went to Germany and heard the story firsthand and was like, I had no idea about this. Guy from the UK wrote a book about it and became a bestseller because the people in the UK were horrified at what their government had done and were happy to know that this crime had been committed, because, you know, you don't want to be ignorant to the fact that you were in some way unknowingly party to a war crime. So again, the idea of this cavalier, like, did we even think for a single second about murdering everyone in Germany? It's like, yeah, we did. And you could make the argument that out of necessity, because of the scale to which the war eventually got, certain extraordinary measures were justified. I wouldn't even argue that necessarily, but certainly with Japan, we were dealing with a very different type of enemy. It's just, it really is just sick that we have people like Lindsey Graham representing us. And of course, the person who's challenging him, I keep talking about, I got to bring in the guys. Just fine if you can find Lindsey Graham's challenger. She's a Democrat woman who I guarantee you is some sort of far leftist communist. But she's just like, we can't have people like Lindsey Graham representing us. I'm a mother of four, and I want to look out for South Carolinians, not do whatever this guy's doing. It's Lindsey Graham just like, we'll kill them all. We'll burn them all to death and we'll dance on their graves. And it's like, okay, I'd vote for her. Why not, right? Just hand it over. Hand over America to the Democrats. Why not? Hand over Iran to the Israelis. Hand over America to the Democrats. And then you can die fat and happy knowing that you destroyed the world and put a final stake in any possibility that the American people ever regain our nation ever again. Thanks, Lindsey. You have a girl's name. Let's go to clip 23 here, because again, this is rumors. This is from RT, and it's a report about what the Iranians are demanding of America. And if we had people that actually cared about America, they might actually take this offer, and it might actually be a good thing. But when you know the character of the people that run our country and run Israel, they'll never do what Iran wants them to do. They'll just get more and more frustrated that they're not winning. And I think the nuke is like the easiest answer for them, and they might just do it. I've never seen them choose not to do something because of, like, the insane precedent it would set. The last couple of years has been evidence of the fact that, like, international outrage, international law, basic decency, the fact that it's all going to be filmed and known by, it doesn't matter. They don't care. They don't care. They just bombed an elementary school full of school children and then did it again and then again. They bombed like 13 hospitals. They don't care. Okay. Might actually just be a quicker and more merciful way to do what they're going to do anyway. I don't know. Maybe a nuke is the merciful choice at this junction when you have murderous psychopaths with a seemingly endless supply of smart bombs. Let's go to clip 23 here.
Okay, some updates emerging from the Middle East, and they appear to be significant ones. Our correspondent in Tehran has learned that political discussions are underway at a regional level and that US military assets across the Middle East could soon, allegedly, be evacuated for a period of time. That would then lead to Iran halting its strikes on Gulf states, just to recall that it said that it would attack those nations if the US had military presence there. And that is what has been seen over the past 12 days. Also, one of Tehran's key goals, we know, is the permanent withdrawal and closure of American bases in the region. The Persian nation indeed has threatened that it will not allow those facilities to be rebuilt. When we get a little bit more on this story, we'll verify exactly as to how many, if not all, those US military bases either closed down or shipped out, and what that will mean for the conflict at large in the coming hours.
So, like, do we think that'll happen? Do we really think that America will agree to the demand that we remove all of our bases? I would love it if that was the case. If that was actually the smart move. It's actually a win-win situation. I don't want to be policing the world with having our young men die in some godforsaken desert against the extremists that another branch of our government armed. Like, okay, yeah, let's get the whole bases out and win-win. Okay, you want the bases out, we want the bases out. Let's come to an agreement. That's amazing. Wouldn't that be great? So I guess the question is the U.S. Army more likely to tuck its tail and leave the Middle East and abandon the place where we've fought for trillions, spent trillions of dollars fighting, fought for years, lost hundreds of thousands of lives, also a major, like the major artery crossroads of the rest of the world? Are we more likely to voluntarily evacuate that area and surrender it to Iran or use a nuclear bomb? Which do you think the United States military, the United States military industrial empire, at the head of which sits Israel, which do you think is more likely? I think I wouldn't be surprised if we learned we'd already used a tactical nuke. Some of the big explosions that we've seen recently, the giant mushroom clouds a mile high, I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest to learn, actually, we used a tactical nuke last week. We just didn't tell you. So I think we're very much on the road towards that. Another reason might be this, clip number 28. Seems like the market for nuclear-resistant doomsday shelters is heating up amongst the billionaires. Let's watch.
What I am aware of is that everybody's telling me we're on borrowed time.
To the extent you can talk about what might be imminent, what is imminent?
Time is not a luxury that we can afford. The time has come. We need to start having the conversation collectively. We should have had it a while ago, but we really need to start having the conversation.
Yeah, it's probably already written on the wind one way or another, and it's going to happen. And there's little or nothing we can do about it. Part of that is a function of nobody's going to listen anyway, you know, and so who are we talking to, right? So we'll know, maybe we'll have more information than the average person on the street is going to have. Things are really going to be bad. And how do you prepare yourself for that and those that you love and care for or friends? How do you prepare for any of that, right? So that's probably the best that we can do.
I think things are going to be pretty difficult starting in a few years. And from what I've been told by sources.
What does that mean? It's going to be difficult.
I can't say specifically. I don't know that much yet. And I can't really say, but just that a lot of what we take for granted now in life, I don't think is going to be, we're not going to have it. A lot of things we have now that makes our lives as wonderful as they are.
He says that he's as sure as he can be that the people who are calling the shots in the world, you can call them the Illuminati, the controllers, the cabal, whatever name you have for them, they believe that there is going to be what he called a geophysical event. A major geophysical event. There have been trillions of dollars that have been spent on deep underground bases for some reason, which we don't know why it is.
Earth's climate also changes pretty radically over
the course of
time.
All right, I'll go ahead and take it down now. So, that video goes on and on. It's a compilation of all the, connected people. And, like, we tell you this all the time. Like, I don't know what you think billionaires talk about while they're like together. It's breakaway civilizations, living forever, having your own nuclear bunker, and how to staff it. Like, this is the conversation that they have because they don't care about us and they don't care about the rest of the world. And I can't understand their mindset, because who would want to live like, it's Dr. Strangelove, right? How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. The whole point of that movie is that when the rich, elite, powerful people learn that in the event of a nuclear holocaust, then they would get to live in an underground city with a bunch of fertile women to rebuild the human race, and they'd be in charge forever. And they're like, maybe it's not so bad if the world gets nuked. That's the mindset of these people. Like, you know, maybe not quite that like hard nosed, but like at the end of the day, they have all the power. They're the billionaires, the trillionaires. If they thought it was so bad, if they really thought the world was ending, like what? So you're just going to be the last person on Earth. You're just going to be holed away in your little underground bunker that where the ceiling is painted like the sky. You're going to live in a cage for, you know, 50 years until you expire while the rest of the world is blanketed in radioactive haze. Like, is that, that's your plan? That's your great escape? Exactly. Why don't you use just a fraction of the money that you spend on yourself and your just insane breakaway civilization and use it to fix the world, use it to actually repair the problems, use it to mitigate some of the threats that we're up against. But no, they would never do that. They're going to break away and then they're going to cause the catastrophe because they all will tell you it's a foregone conclusion. It's assumed. And the problem is it's not just old coots and billionaires like this. I had a friend that went and visited the offices of a very, you know, prominent AI company. I think it was Anthropic. I'm not entirely sure. He's basically like, yeah, everybody there is convinced that the world is over, basically, that we have like maybe 10 years left and that the only thing to do is party as hard as you can, make as much money as you possibly can because there's nothing you can do to change it. And it's like, okay, so you're telling me that there's like 100 engineers, the smartest people in the world with most advanced technology ever in existence, and they all are just going with the foregone conclusion that there's no hope and there's nothing to do and there's no way to prevent whatever catastrophe they think is coming. I bet they all have different theories too. You know, it'd be one thing if there's just like, yeah, there's a moon-sized asteroid headed towards Earth. It's going to hit in 100 years. Like, that's it. All we can hope to do is like, maybe we could escape to the moon for, you know, it's not like there's like a big threat that everybody just goes, well, I guess let's party because that's all it is. It's like one of them thinks AI is going to take over. Another one thinks a nuclear holocaust is inevitable. Another one just like thinks climate change is real. They all just want the world to end. And so they believe that's the case. And so they contribute to the world ending. We have a severe like lack of hope. I think we need hope. I think people need to understand that it is a self-fulfilling prophecy to say that we have lost and the world is not worth saving. If you believe that, then you're right.
Has InfoWars not delivered? In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or you know, in the arena, and he says, "Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?"
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the InfoWar continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity, against the globalists, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried ultramethylene blue or our bovine colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you should become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it recurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click in your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexjonesstore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet. Up to 40% off store-wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats. 10% off on things like the collectible knives and up to 40% off on supplements like Ultramethylene Blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March Mega Sale right now, running until the 17th at TheUltraStore.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. Again, I salute you and thank you. Take action now.
Keep your hand on your gun.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. Second hour is on. I have a lot of videos still to get to. I'm trying to get to as many as I can this hour and open up the phone lines in the last hour, both for your comments about what's going on worldwide, but also because I have a question for you here, as Sam puts it, here at the end of all things, here as we sit on the side of Mount Doom, as the world crumbles around us, and the end of InfoWars is there on the horizon. I have a question for our audience, and I'll take your calls and tell you the question in the third hour. I want to go to a video now of Daniel McAdams, co-host of Ron Paul's, from Ron Paul's channel. Of course, the story we were just covering in the story at Zero Hedge. Trump cabinet members are buying at nuclear bunkers. Are you prepared? Apparently, rumor is that Pam Bondi and others have now moved to military sites away from their civilian homes, which has been something a lot of the Trump administration has been doing. And this may be because there is no off-ramp to Iran outside of nuclear exchange. Now, I don't think that's an accident, but here's Daniel McAdams and Ron Paul breaking down the possible off-ramps that Trump may have and why he may be looking for one. Let's watch.
This is a picture of Tel Aviv, and I think this is the real reason why they are desperate to get out of this war. You're not seeing these photos even through excessive, extreme censorship. Tel Aviv right now is being absolutely flattened. Now, the propaganda from the Trump administration is that we've taken out their Navy, we've taken out their missile launchers, we've taken out their missiles, they don't have an Air Force. Okay, but if that is true, then how is Tel Aviv being flattened? They're not doing it themselves. So there is a desperation sinking in. The Israelis have fired all of their interceptor missiles. They can't stop these missiles coming in right now, and it's getting into the dangerous phase. I had two videos, though, I wanted to play because, I mean, we could probably spend this whole show doing videos of Trump, but he said a couple of things yesterday that led me to believe that he's panicking, too, because to me it looks like he's trying to shift blame for starting this war onto his own son-in-law and Steve Witkoff.
A while ago, they told Mr. Witkoff, who is standing right over here, they said, they actually said, we want to keep building, essentially, in a real nutshell, we want to continue to build nuclear weapons. If we didn't knock out Midnight Hammer, if we didn't knock out their Iranian potential, if we didn't do that with Midnight Hammer, they would have had a nuclear weapon. They would have used it long before now.
We can cut it now. The essence of what he says is that Steve Witkoff told him that the Iranians told Steve Witkoff that we want to keep building nuclear weapons. There's no evidence for that. The interlocutors say this did not happen. It's a flat-out lie. So either Witkoff was lying when he told the president that, or the president is lying right now when he said that. But now that the other one is probably even worse, because he admitted that he started this war on the advice of two real estate developers and a Fox News personality. Go on to this next one, because this is not how you start wars.
Return, and the United States found it intolerable, in my opinion, based on what Steve and Jared and Pete and others were telling me, Marco so involved.
Jared and Pete and Marco, to a degree, were telling him he had to go in now. This is why we have Congress. This is why we deliberate over wars. You don't send your real estate developer friends over to a place to do the negotiation, and they come home and say, wow, it's bad, and you go to war.
See, we know that we go to war at the will of the president. But he also assumes he can end it on his terms. But somebody gave him some advice I thought was pretty good advice. Guess what, Mr. President? You might think you have the authority, but you don't have the clout, and you don't have the ability that the Iranians have, and they predicted Iran will decide when the war is over.
Yep, and again, I think they're exactly right. And again, as frustrated as I am about the absurdity of yet another Middle East war, I can only imagine Ron Paul, who had, you know, 20 years of experience in this before I was even born. Got to be frustrating. It's time we break this cycle. It's time we get out of this ridiculous quagmire.
I'm an influencer, by the way. I'm a patriot and a journalist and a pundit and analysis and a futurist and father and a guy who loves God. Influencer comes from the time of Plato and Aristotle and Socrates. And influencers are people that use rhetoric without facts and reality and logic to convince dumb people. So when the globalists call you all influencers and you go, yeah, I'm an influencer. It just shows how stupid you are. Stop calling yourselves influencers. I'm a philosopher. I'm a warrior. I'm a game changer. I'm a historian. I'm a fighter. I'm a pioneer. I'm an explorer. I got red blood. It's pumping through my big heart fast. I like life and freedom and justice. I like women. I like red meat. I like guns. I like sunsets and puppy dogs. And ladies of the night, to quote Waylon Jennings.
Dismantling the globalist agenda hour by hour. This is the War Room with Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, folks. Second hour of the War Room is on. Yeah, we have so much to cover. This is just crazy. So apparently, the latest from Bill Malugin is that the person who drove a vehicle into the Michigan synagogue today, the vehicle is registered to a naturalized U.S. citizen from Lebanon who lives in Dearborn, Michigan. So there's that. That's the latest from there. We also have Mamdani doing a Muslim ceremony of some sort in New York City Hall. Absolutely infuriating. Because, again, it's just like it's like we're not supposed to notice. It's like we're supposed to think this is fine. It's ridiculous. I got so much to get to. So we'll finish off with Iran here. We get to Lebanon, what's happening there. I really want to show you what the latest interview with Larry Fink that is kind of hilarious because he gets pressed on the woke crap he pushed. And I got to talk about the UK because of what is going on there. Oh, my God, there's just too much. All right. So fresh U.S. intel assessment after Iran says Iran regime not even close to collapse after 2 weeks of war. Okay, so it's supposed to last 48 hours. This is the Gilligan's Island trip of wars, right? So it's be a three-hour tour. We'll be here several years from now. Iran's new leader vows to keep Hormuz shut in his defiant first remarks, saying Iran will fight on and keep the Strait of Hormuz shut as leverage against the United States. He says that the popular demand in Iran is to continue our effective defense and make the enemy regret it. The lever of blocking the Strait of Hormuz must continue to be used, Khamenei added, referring to the shipping route through which one-fifth of all global oil normally passes along Iran's coast. Again, he is saying that he's not only doing this out of strategic necessity, but because his people demand it. Because once again, if our plan the whole time was to, you know, make the ruling regime of Iran untenable, we have done exactly the opposite of that, I think deliberately. Trump will release 172 million barrels of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Tapping the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, the U.S. will release 172 million barrels to help lower prices amid the Iran war. Amid the Iran war, gasoline prices rose to about $3.58 per gallon, 22% higher than last month when gas averaged around $2.94. The SPR currently holds 415 million barrels, about 58% of the 714 barrels authorized, and the IEA agreed to release 400 million barrels, the largest in history, with U.S. participation up to President Trump, Burgum said. This, of course, is a temporary fix, can't last forever, and is just delaying the inevitable crash. Trump administration estimates the Iran war cost a little over $11 billion in just 6 days. So it's been 12 now. I wonder if we could double that. Wonder if it's cost us $22 billion or if those first couple of days were particularly pricey for us. Officials from Trump's administration estimated during a congressional briefing this week that the first 6 days of the war in Iran had cost at least $11.3 billion. A source familiar with the matter said on Wednesday. Administration officials have also told lawmakers that $5.6 billion of munitions were used during those first 2 days of strikes. So there you go. This is the deal we're making. $5.2 billion of munitions, several American lives. In exchange, we get endless war forever without a purpose. Great deal, Trump the deal maker. Trump said he has been briefed on Iranian sleeper cells. Quote, we know where most are. They came in under Sleepy Joe. Tell you what, that's a problem, Trump. You're not supposed to know where the sleeper cells are. If you know where they are, why haven't you rounded them up yet? Would be my question. Let's go to clip 21. This is Trump's comment.
Friday hit us back. Have you been briefed about how many Iran sleeper cells there could be inside the U.S. right now?
I have been, and a lot of people came in through Biden with this stupid open border. But we know where most of them are. We've got our eye on all of them, I think.
Is it dozens?
They came in through the open border policies of Sleepy Joe Biden, one of the worst president in the history of our country. And we've got our eyes on all of them. But the war itself is being prosecuted at a level that nobody's seen before. It's pretty amazing to watch.
You know where the sleeper cells are? Like, that doesn't make any sense, Trump. He's like, we've got our eye on him. There's one that's about to attack a synagogue in Michigan. It's a false flag by Mossad. But we know where they are. We know exactly where the Mossad, I mean Iranian sleeper cells are. We got our eye on him. Don't worry. No, I'm worried. No, it's, again, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, it's like either there are sleeper cells and we should probably arrest them, and we're not arresting them probably because we want them to do something to get us more into the war in Iran, or there's false flag sleeper cells, or they don't know where the sleeper cells are and therefore aren't arresting them. It's not true. I'm not sure what the truth is. What he said, I hope isn't true. I hope there are not Iranian sleeper cells in America waiting to be activated, being watched by the FBI, being observed in this by the CIA. That's the wrong way to deal with this. But okay, great. Very reassuring. Of course, it was Sleepy Joe to, you know, let these people across the border. I guess that would be one of the many reasons why everybody in his administration should have, at this point in Trump's administration, have been charged with treason and convicted for crimes that they committed. Only one of which, and perhaps a minor one in the great scheme of things, being the proliferation of sleeper cells from any number of countries or enemies of us, China included, but Iran included as well. And I also for the record, if I was Iran, I wouldn't be doing sleeper cells. I would know that Americans being attacked in their homeland would be the one thing that would guarantee that this war continue, that the Iranian leadership best weapon at this point is the fact that this war is unpopular and can't be sustained politically for that much longer. So I don't know. I mean, I know our leadership is suicidal and, you know, willing to kill its own people and pursue just utterly nonsensical foreign aid or foreign activity. But I don't get that from Iran. I don't get that sentiment from Iran. Seems smart to me. They seem like the things they do have a purpose and a reason, and it's strategic and it's all a part of like a wider plan. I just genuinely do not believe that Iran would be that stupid. Okay. Maybe I'm wrong, but seriously. And usually these types of hunches are correct. We had the exact same hunch, if you want to call it that, when Barack Obama said, if Bashar al-Assad uses chemical weapons against his own people, America will get involved in the Assyrian civil war. And then like the next week, it was reports of, oh, Assad has used a chemical weapon against his own people. Like, wait, he was winning the war. He was handling the civil war. He didn't need to use chemical weapons by any means. But you're saying that he just did against this random village just so he could cross Obama's red line. Not because it was useful to him, not because it was a act of necessity, but seemingly only to cross that red line and fulfill the demand that America get into the war. And no. No. Bashar al-Assad is not an idiot. He's not suicidal. And he didn't just deliberately do the one thing that would get America into the war. I have the same idea about Iran. Okay. And of course, we were right about Bashar al-Assad. The like official UN weapons inspectors confirmed that there was never a weapons attack, even though it was a chemical weapon attack, even though to this day, they still say that there wasn't. So again, I wouldn't be surprised if they're Iranian. Like if I was Iran, absolutely, I would be sending people into America. And this is the thing. It's not like this is contradictory. It's not like I'm saying there are sleeper cells, there aren't sleeper cells. I'm saying if I was Iran, I would absolutely have put sleeper cells into America. Why wouldn't you? Right? If I was China, why wouldn't you? Your enemy is America and they have an open border policy. They don't even check your ID. Hell yeah. How many people can we spare? Send 10,000, 100,000 people. Get them all in there. Of course you would do that. Why wouldn't you? So if there are Iranian sleeper cells, I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest. It would be irresponsible of them not to, with an open border under Joe Biden. That being said, for them to activate sleeper cells now would be suicidal and completely counterproductive to all of their stated and very sensical war aims compared to ours. From Keith Woods, Trump's war in Iran is causing Gulf states to reassess their relationship with the U.S. and look to diversify their foreign partnerships. Quote, many believed he dragged the Gulf into a war shaped heavily by Israel without sharing a plan and acting hastily and without fully weighing the political and economic fallout for allies. The U.S. is simply torching its diplomatic leverage for Israeli interests. Same time, analysts say the war has left the Gulf states reassessing both their security dependence on Washington and the prospect of eventually engaging Tehran on new regional security arrangements, even as trust in Iran has collapsed. For decades, relations between Washington and the Gulf states rested on an implicit trade-off. Gulf energy and capital, including hundreds of billions of dollars spent on U.S. arms, advanced technology and goods and services in return for U.S. protection, said Fawaz Gurjiz of the London School of Economics. He says the war has shaken those assumptions. Now, he says, Gulf states would accelerate their efforts to diversify their foreign and security partnerships, realizing, quote, they cannot rely on the United States to protect their energy, oil, gas, their people, and their sovereignty. And Iran knows they can't trust us in negotiations. And I mean, it's just like, yeah, we're burning our diplomatic ties. We're burning our foothold in the region. We're burning our ability to actually come to agreements with other countries or negotiate an end to this war. We have sacrificed it all on the altar of Israel. It is all for the sake of Israel and not for their existence. Remember, I don't know how many times I've said this in the last 3 years. It's all about Israel's total freedom of action to kill anybody they want. That's what we're fighting for. It's not for Israel's survival. There could have been a settlement agreement. There have been ceasefires that Israel hasn't upheld. The options were either Israel can chill out a little bit and just stop murdering everybody and just calm down and give rights to the people that are living as slaves right now and give representation to the people. They didn't want to do that. They didn't want to treat their neighbors like humans. So they'd rather get America into a catastrophic and self-defeating war against Iran. I've got a couple of videos to go to about that. First, let's go to clip 25 here. This is a reporter from NBC asking a top Netanyahu advisor about why America had to go to war with Iran and what the big threat was. You think they have a good answer? No, they're lying. The real answer is because they want the Greater Israel Project and they want to no longer be reliant on America while simultaneously destroying America and building up their own base in the Middle East to be a hegemonic power in that area, like we've been telling you since 2024. Let's watch clip 25 here.
What information did you have that Iran was about to carry out an imminent attack?
One good indication was that for 47 years they've been saying death to America. Death to Israel. Believe it.
Yeah, but that's 47 years, but why that day?
And they were ramping up their capabilities with the ballistic missiles. They're stringing along the negotiations. They always lie. Listen to your negotiators. They'll tell you the truth. They're stringing them along. They always lie, and it was an imminent threat. And we removed that imminent threat.
I still don't understand what the imminent threat was, that they were going to attack Israel, attack American bases, attack the U.S. An imminent threat of what?
All of the above. They were threatening their neighbors. Look at what they're doing now. they're shooting at all their immediate neighbors. All the, you know, the mask is revealed. These guys, it's a death cult that not only called and killed Americans for 47 years and Israelis for 47 years, now they're killing their neighbors.
Of course they're attacking, they're firing now because they're under attack. There's a hot war going on. I'm trying to understand what started this war.
They slaughtered thousands, tens of thousands of Iranians. They slaughtered them on the streets. 30,000 innocent people were slaughtered on the streets in a matter of days. It's a death cult. It's a death cult, and we're removing that threat.
President Trump said that Iran was weeks away from developing a nuclear weapon and potentially using one. Is that Prime Minister Netanyahu's assessment as well?
Well, we know that they wanted it. We know that they were planning it. We know that was the imminent threat. You see today what they're doing with the oil. They're blackmailing the world with the oil. They would blackmail the world with the nukes. President Trump is saving the free world right now.
But were they just weeks away from having a nuclear weapon?
Well, that was their intention. I don't know if it was weeks or months or whatever it was, but it was an imminent threat, and certainly the ballistic missiles that they were trying to bury underground would have been immune. And then what? We'd leave this threat for our kids, for our grandkids. No, we got to do it now. The price of action is often high. The price of inaction is often much higher.
So you have nothing. So in other words, you have absolutely nothing. They just have to, how is that an imminent threat? Well, they've been saying death to America for 47 years. Okay, what is the imminent threat? I mean, pathetic, just utterly and absolutely pathetic. And like every excuse they have, it A, doesn't make any sense on the face of it. And B, they have no proof to make it anyway. He says they slaughtered tens of thousands of their own people. It's like, I would love to see just any evidence of that. They just keep saying it. I've never seen this backed up. I've never seen it reported officially. As far as I can tell, there was something like some sort of report that guessed there were 3,000 people killed. And then they said, but, you know, that's probably 10 times less than the real number. So let's go ahead and multiply that by 10. Now the official, you know, story that we're starting a war over is that 30,000 people died. You show me a single picture of a single person dying? Do you know how many 30,000 people is? And there was not a single image of any of it. There was never a report, never an you know, account from a Iranian saying this. This is the at least with the first Gulf War, you had the girl sit and give the testimony about the babies in incubators. They didn't even bother to do the testimony this time. They're just coming out and going, yeah, they killed babies in incubators. Don't ask questions. Stop questioning me. They killed babies, 10,000 babies in incubators. They killed them. You're saying we should let them live? And it's like, they are literally just making things up. It is completely insane. Again, we could go over and over on it, but the craziest part, obviously, is the fact that they're saying that Iran is at war with all of its neighbors. It's like, and I love the NBC guys like, you mean right now during the hot war? I'm talking about what's leading up to the war. The guy, he knows what you're asking. He doesn't have an answer. But it's just particularly ironic because Israel has literally attacked seven of its neighbors in the last year. And now they are slating all of Lebanon for total destruction. Total, abject, complete eradication of the Lebanese people. They've just expanded their exclusion zone where they're telling people to evacuate to another like 1.2 million people. And by the way, the people that did evacuate from the zones they were told to evacuate from pitched tents on the beach. And then they got bombed there. So again, it's crazy because like they come up with these excuses for what they did to Gaza. And the excuses aren't even valid. They're not even good, but they apply them to Gaza. And then they come up with all these other excuses for Iran. Again, totally made up, total baseless accusations, just ridiculous nonsense. But at least they make them. And then they just bomb the hell out of Lebanon and don't even bother to give you a reason or make an excuse. They don't even make the argument that like, well, they're Palestinians. Palestine never existed. Again, ridiculous when they claim this stuff, but at least it's a claim. With Lebanon, it's like, okay, Lebanon exists. The people have been there for 5,000 years. It was never, you know, a part of God's promise to Israel, whatever. It doesn't matter. They're like, we're killing everybody in Lebanon. And if you think I'm exaggerating, I'm not. I actually translated this myself. This is retired Israeli General Uzi Dayan. He's on Israeli Channel 12, asked about what Israel's next step in Lebanon is. Again, you're not going to find this translation anywhere. I did it myself using AI. So it's the same voice. First, you'll hear the voice ask the question. That's the reporter asking. And then the same voice answers the question. It's kind of confusing, but it's because I did it through AI. This is the only place you will get this. It's clip 33. Here's retired Israeli General Uzi Dayan about what is planned for innocent neighbor of Israel, Lebanon. Let's watch.
So after a night of incessant firing towards the north and Hezbollah's announcement of a military operation, what should be the next step for Israel in Lebanon? Lebanon needs to act immediately, quickly, with all its might. This is a real failure. What is happening there? What is acting quickly and strongly? A. To occupy territory, expel everyone who is there. Destroy everything there and declare it a death zone, meaning that no one walks there, neither Cypriots nor anyone who sees it. Nor UNIFIL nor IDF soldiers, and make it a death zone. While continuing to bomb Hezbollah wherever possible, everywhere in Lebanon. And issue an ultimatum to the Lebanese government. Or you outlaw them. Act accordingly. In short, you are thwarting the rapid growth. If not, we will destroy all the infrastructure in Lebanon. This is something we are going to do, and I am talking about electricity, water, transportation. This is what needs to be done and time allocated for it in days. And do it, otherwise we lose the north.
All right, so there you go. Again, hard to find this stuff in English. It's all in Hebrew. But that was the Israeli general being asked about what would be done to Lebanon. He says we need to act immediately and quickly with all our might. What's happening there is truly a failure. He says we need to strongly occupy an area, expel everyone who's there, destroy everything there, and declare it a death zone. That is to say, no one's walking around there, not villages, not shepherds, not UNIFIL, not IDF soldiers. Make it a death zone. At the same time, continue to bomb Hezbollah everywhere possible, everywhere in Lebanon, and issue an ultimatum to the Lebanese government, or you outlaw them. Act accordingly. In short, you eliminate the malignant growth. Lebanon, the country of Lebanon. If not, we will destroy all the infrastructure in Lebanon. This is something we can do. I'm talking about electricity, water, transportation. Okay, so Israel is just a terrorist nation of psychotic arsonists. And they did it to Gaza. They'll do it to Iran. They're doing it to Lebanon. Again, Lebanon did not bother them. Lebanon is a multi-faith republic. A third of the Lebanese population is Christian, and the Christian communities are the ones being bombed, including the murder of a Catholic priest a few days ago. The people that are being told to evacuate are evacuating, and then Israel is bombing them on the beach and are killing hundreds and hundreds of people on a daily basis. All of this because Lebanon won't willingly give up their land to Israel. All Lebanon wants is to be left alone. All Lebanon has ever done is to defend itself from Israeli incursion and invasion. And Israel's there on TV. Their official policy, Lebanon has to fully and completely submit itself willingly to eradication, or they'll be eradicated anyway. And they'll turn all of Lebanon into Gaza by cutting off their electricity, destroying their transportation, destroying their water, and I guess letting them all starve to death. Here's an idea. What if America, the great Christian nation, come in and defend Lebanon from the psychotic and aggressive activity of these mentally ill weirdos who think that they own everything they put their eyes on? What about that?
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan's talked about it, I have for years. But here it is. Scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62 that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public that's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these embendazole, fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell. And sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this house where it put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on, medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, I've been on this in 2004. When I got blown up in Iraq, I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at theelvishowstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at theelvishowstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger. Exclusively available through our sponsor, theelvishowstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells, the methylene blue. And iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at theelvishowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the War Room. I want to remind you that as InfoWars, as an entity, comes to a early demise, not having anything to do with our own actions. You know, that's one of the things that is good about InfoWars having survived this long, because people will just assume, or they'll spread the story, that InfoWars failed, that we closed down because nobody was watching us or whatever. And it's like, if we get shut down, when we get shut down, which is happening, you know, in about a month, we'll have absolutely nothing to do with our popularity. Our popularity is higher than it ever was. Other places have come and gone. Other institutions, other news outlets, maybe they get a big, maybe they make a big splash and then they sort of degrade and then nobody's watching them. And then people move on and they just sort of shutter eventually and nobody cares. We have only ever been on an upward trajectory in terms of popularity and support. And of course there's been a little ups and downs, but overall the trajectory has been positive because more and more people on a daily basis are realizing that we were right the entire time and that we've, you know, had our eye on the ball the whole time. And so no matter what, obviously the mission continues. We will still be here. We will still be, you know, operating together as a unit. And I really can't express how valuable this is. Like, would InfoWars be even, you know, a fraction as powerful as we are if we had all the same people in their same numbers or their same talents, but everybody was just on their own? Everybody was just working for themselves, trying to get their own thing going. Like, I always picture InfoWars as the battleship as opposed to a bunch of little rowboats, right? A bunch of little rowboats could be effective too, and we need rowboats out there. We need our little clipper ships, you know, flanking us. But at the end of the day, when you can have sailors in their position doing their role together, all unified towards the same directive, and you can move this giant ship that is a, you know, war fighting platform, that's what InfoWars is. It's all these talented people, all the incredible crew, dedicated, tuned in, awake to what's going on, passionate about our mission to save the world. Instead of just being on our own, sort of going in our own direction, maybe vaguely trying to travel in the same direction. No, we're all on the same ship. Captain Alex Jones, we're all filling our roles. And together, we're moving forward the SS, well, I was going to say the USS Liberty, but that might not be the best label, huh? Although, kind of appropriate, actually. Actually, now that I think about it, maybe we are the USS Liberty. Maybe we will be taken down by friendly fire and a false flag attack. Yes. The ship continues to steam ahead as long as we've got coal in the furnace, and you put it there by going to thealexjonesstore.com. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. Get the T3, the new iodine tincture. You're not going to regret it. If you've ever tried iodine, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you haven't, you will. Okay. It's amazing. It's incredible. Again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not making any medical claims. But I had a friend when I first started working here, he started taking X2. And he's like, dude, I sleep like an hour or two less a night. You know, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen for you. Don't come at me if you're like, I'm still sleeping 8 hours. You don't know is the point. You don't know what it's going to do for you. You don't know what you're missing out on. You don't know, you know, the effects of not having iodine. Once you start taking it, you'll realize, at least it's happened to me and it's happened to my friends, like, oh, I wasn't supposed to be tired all the time. I wasn't supposed to have to sleep more than everybody else. I was just short of iodine, or, oh, you know, whatever it is. You'll see. You'll feel the effects. You will notice the difference. The Trifecta Iodine Tincture. Get it now at thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. Again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not making any medical claims. Just to be absolutely clear. Since we're on the topic of being sued. But I don't need to make the claims. You hear the callers call in and make the claims. You hear the testimonies. Go read the reviews of iodine. It's the same stuff as X2, but just even better. Try iodine at thealexjonesstore.com. Go read the reviews. Go find out what it can do for you. Start taking it and, you know, your life will change. You've heard from enough people calling in and saying exactly that. And I use it for everything, by the way. Again, I'm not a doctor, but it's just like, Everything, you know, skin, whatever, like bug bites. I put it on everything and it works. TheOxygenStore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. Now let's see. We've got, all right. I want to go to a few more videos. I'm torn because I got to talk about the UK. I might save that for just the next hour, but I'm going to take your calls the next hour as well. Cause I got to talk about Lebanon. I have more to talk about when it comes to Israel, though not specifically the war alone. But since we're on the topic of Israel and the war in Iran, these videos just broke while we were live, both from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Let's go to this first clip of Netanyahu. He made a speech just a few minutes ago, and it's about the Iran war. And again, the one thing that throws me for a loop when it comes to the Iran war, it doesn't really, but like the Tel Aviv stock market keeps hitting record highs. And every time I see somebody like Netanyahu or one of the, like you see the Trump officials and like they're put, you can kind of tell they're putting a face on it, right? You can kind of tell they're going, we are doing great. We're amazing. We're destroying everything. We still have a lot of work to do, but like it's going awesome and we are the strongest military in the world. It's like, eh, okay, maybe. But then you watch the Israelis and they seem genuinely thrilled. They seem genuinely confident and happy of how everything is going and the stock market is raising. And so I'm like, all right. What am I missing here? As far as I can tell, Israel's getting battered, getting hammered, and there's no sign of it slowing down, and there's sort of lost control of this whole operation, and even how America's getting hit is nothing compared to how, you know, Israeli resources in the area are getting hit. So maybe I'm missing something, but really I just think they're thrilled that everything is going according to plan. Netanyahu threatens Iran new leader, says government collapse uncertain. Let's go to this video of Netanyahu earlier today, this first one, saying I believe we all recognize. Let's watch.
All recognize the fact that we will reach to the kingdom. We will make it to the return of the Messiah, but this will not happen next Thursday. The lives of nations is always precarious and surrounded with threats. Our survival, our endurance is a result of alliances that we forge for our existence to be stronger. No doubt we are moving from one battle to another, from the establishment and with this battle now, with this operation, Israel has become stronger than ever.
Israel has become stronger than ever. And he says, we'll make it to the kingdom and the coming of the Messiah. So just again, don't be confused by the fact that people like me are saying this is all in pursuit of some, you know, false prophecy, bringing forward the Antichrist. This is about rebuilding the temple. Like, this is the funny thing. I had somebody on X yesterday be like, why don't you go kvetch about the third temple more? And it's like, do you think I made up the third temple? You think I came up with this? You think this is something I'm like interested in? No, the people doing it are saying this is why they're doing it. The people waging the war are saying it's in order to rebuild the third temple, to rebuild the temple a third time, to usher in the Antichrist, to bring about the Messiah and, quote unquote, the kingdom. Now, the kingdom, according to them, is when the Moshiach comes, the Messiah comes, which their interpretation, false and retroactively, you know, disfigured the Torah to get there. But it's that, you know, they'll have a king that will basically rule over the world. And this is the crazy thing about like anti-Semitism, Israel, Judaism, whatever it is. It's like if you ask the average Jew, like, what does your religion believe? Like, if you ask the average Christian, what is the Christian worldview? What do you believe? It's happening. What do you think is going on? That's pretty obvious what we tell you, right? Jesus Christ was the Son of God. He came to earth. He was killed. He rose again. He died for our sins. And we're supposed to serve him. Like, it's pretty, you know, clear, cut and dry, right? You ask a Jewish person, and it's also pretty clear and cut and dry. It's just, if I say it, it's anti-Semitic. Right. And I've literally a Jewish friend, Jonathan, I asked him like probably 6 months ago, just like, so like, why would you just describe like what you do? And it's like, well, we believe that we're scattered and that, you know, one day God will return us all to Israel and then he'll give us the Messiah and he'll be the king. And we'll basically like kind of like rule the world, you know, from then on out. And it's like that, unless I'm mistaken, I mean, unless I've seriously misread like the Jewish religion, like that is the religious belief, right? Am I wrong? That is what the point of the Messiah is. When he says the kingdom, he means that God will give you a king, like a physical, real, earthly king to rule over everybody. And this is where, and again, I don't know, there's different interpretations, exactly how many slaves you get or whatever. But like one of the common beliefs is that like every Jewish person will have like 2,800 Gentile slaves. And anybody that doesn't want to go along with it will be killed. And I had a video earlier this week of somebody saying exactly this, a rabbi saying, oh, Tucker Carlson's worried about the third temple. Well, if you don't want to serve us after the third temple, it's fine because you'll be killed. You'll be swept away. You'll be done away with. So again, am I wrong? Like, is that not the belief? Like, you can quibble a little bit, but pretty sure in general, broad strokes, that's what it is, right? Jews are scattered. One day, God will return them, and there's like debate there. That's why you have some like religious Jewish sects, the Hasidics and others, who say, you know, this is wrong. God is supposed to return us to Israel. It's supposed to be a miraculous thing. It's not supposed to be a human-led endeavor, which is why they don't like the current state of Israel. They think it's like a shortcut. They're trying to trick God when it's really supposed to be God summoning them back, not Theodore Herzl. But they still believe that God is one day going to bring them all back to Israel, and then from Israel, they're going to rule with a God, King, Messiah over the rest of the world. Like, that is Judaism, right? Am I wrong? I'm just saying. Benjamin Netanyahu literally is giving official speeches where he's saying he's ushering in the Antichrist. That in the pursuit of war with Iran, they are bringing about the Messiah. He just said it, and that the kingdom will be realized. Like, it won't happen next Thursday, but maybe 5 years from now, something like that. So again, you don't come at me about the religious retardation that's driving this war. Swear to God, I can't remember his name. Whatever, he's like a popular MAGA guy, but he's like trying to mock me about the third temple and the red heifers. And it's like, if you think the red heifers in the temple is stupid, go tell the people doing it. Go tell the people who are like starting wars over it. Go tell the prime minister of Israel who's giving a speech where he says that's what's directing him. Like, what are you talking? Why? It's crazy. It's just one of these things where it's like you say reality and people think you're the crazy one. No, this is certainly crazy. It ain't me. That's just the beginning. You can be mad at me for telling you this stuff, but I'm just passing it along. These people say it. I actually listen to them and think about it for a little bit and realize that what they're saying isn't just hot air. It follows along with the actual actions they're taking around the world. And then I tell you what is happening. Like, it's, I'm not coming up with any of this stuff. I'm just observing. Here's Benjamin Netanyahu telling you literally what I've been telling you since 2024, what I made the Eighth Front War video about. Israel intends to become a superpower by using America to destroy Iran. In doing so, they plan on America being massively hampered and harmed and hurt and injured and cause chaos, probably a civil war here, get the Democrats back in power here by doing this all on the back of the Republicans, destroying the ability of Republicans to get elected in America. America goes over to the Democrats. By that point, sure, they might move away from Israel, but that's inevitable now or a decade from now. It's happening. So fine. The left takes over America. They flood it with foreigners. They basically institute every anti-white agenda they could possibly do. And that destroys the, you know, European diaspora. At the same time, Europe has been flooded with Muslims. I'm sure they'll get tens of millions more from the wars that we're starting here. Or like right now, overseas in the Middle East. And then once, you know, Europe completely falls to the Muslims, which they are, and I'll explain that to you in the next hour, then Turkey and then Europe will be next on the chopping block. Gaza, Lebanon, Iran, Turkey, Germany, France. I mean, it's just, why not, right? Why not? Let's go to Netanyahu, confirming what I've been telling you for the last 2 years.
Citizens of Israel, my brothers and sisters, we are in historic days, days that will be written in the annals of Israel. In Operation Roaring Lion, our war is going and intensifying. We are pummeling the Islamic regime in Tehran. We are pummeling its emissaries, Hezbollah in Lebanon. This unprecedented coordination between Israel and the U.S. and achieved substantial achievements that are changing the reality in the West Bank, in the Middle East and beyond. These achievements are increasing the status of Israel as a superpower more than ever. Through our power and as in opposition to the power of our enemies, this is what is ensuring our survival. Our threats come and go, but when we become a regional superpower, and in many respects a global superpower, we have the power to push away threats and ensure our future.
So, I mean, that's just, again, it's just what, I mean, it's just what I've been saying for 2 years. They are trying to become a regional, dare I say, world superpower, and then we'll be able to handle our own threats. What does that mean? They won't have to rely on America anymore. What does that mean? They don't care about America anymore. If it doesn't serve them, why would they care? And again, watch the Eighth Front. You will actually hear people who are doing it telling you what they're doing. Not only does it begin with a similar speech of Netanyahu saying something similar, the very last clip, it's him saying basically exactly the same thing. We will achieve peace in the region, aka eradicate Iran. And once that happens, we will stand, you know, astride the world as a superpower along with you guys. But like, everywhere else is being destroyed. And of course, America is being destroyed too. Again, this isn't a, you know, I don't fall for the false dichotomy. Like, let's go to clip 16 here. This is posted by End Wokeness. We can play this as B-roll. This is New York City Hall under Mamdani, because we're being hit with a pincer move here. Because we are being invaded by third world foreigners, many of whom are Muslim, many of whom have no intention of actually becoming American in any meaningful way whatsoever. Here's a bunch of invading foreigners holding up the one finger. That's the ISIS sign, right? Praying and doing their acts of, you know, supremacy and eating with their hands on the floor of the, New York City Hall. It's just like so degrading. And it's like, I did an interview with Sneeko, and he kept being like, I didn't realize that he was like a Muslim guy. I mean, I knew he was Muslim, but I didn't realize like that's what his thing was. He's like pushing that. And he's just like, he's being like, oh, but we're like only 1% though. Like, why do you worry about us? We're like only 1%. It's like, okay, but you're doing like acts of, you know, submission. You're like showing off that you're taking over large chunks of the country. Like, we're not stupid. And we don't need to like be okay with it. And like the arrogance of even asking the question is so offensive to me. Can you imagine going to a Muslim country and going, well, what the heck? Why aren't you letting me make it more Christian? Why aren't you letting me change your culture? Do you hate me? And it's just like, because there's no reason why we should. It was like confusing. I was like really confused because I'm just like talking to the guy thinking that, you know, we're cool. I'm like, and he's just acting weird. And it wasn't until like afterwards, I was like, oh, he's like a subversive Muslim guy who just like is trying to make that argument constantly. And he just kept trying to be like, yeah, but the Jews, you know, but really the problem is the Jews, right? And I'm like, I guess, what? You didn't ask me about the Jews. You asked me about the Muslims. I told you my answer about the Muslims. It's weird, man. It's this weird dichotomy where the Muslims think that, like, you have to. And by the way, one thing he's like, well, you know, the Jews fear the Muslims the most. I mean, look at, you know, how they're attacking or whatever. And it's like, I don't think that's true at all, actually. I think it's, you know, clearly the other way around. I think there's a reason that there's been a deliberate and well-advertised policy of flooding Europe with Muslims to destroy it. I don't think it's because the Muslims are so scary and strong and capable, okay? Because they're easy to control. So anyway, it's not even about, it's just like, why are we being torn apart in so many different directions? Why are we allowing ourselves to be invaded in one hand while we're invading another country for another country on the other? Why are we building up Israel to be a superpower to, you know, fight against us, I guess, but we're going to waste all of our money and all of our bases in the Middle East to achieve this? It's just such an obvious scam, and our politicians are just in on it, I guess. They're all just like Lindsey Grahams. It's ridiculous. And then, oh my God, there's just so much. I want to get into what's happening in Lebanon, but I really got to get into this latest story. Israel drops charges against soldiers in Palestine detainee abuse case. Israel has dropped all charges against five soldiers accused of sexually abusing a Palestinian detainee at a military detention facility, Israeli media outlets have reported. Closing a case, it became one of the most divisive in the country's recent history. Now, if you remember this, I mean, every step of this has been utterly insane and inhuman and disgusting, to be honest with you. What happened was a Palestinian prisoner, parental warning, by the way, you know, language advisory coming for you here. Sorry, we're talking about, you know, the normal function, the quotidian everyday activity of the Israeli army. So you are going to hear about some horrors, horrible things, okay? So he's talking about the Associated Press has that line. The Israeli military says it's dropping charges against five soldiers who were accused of sexually abusing a Palestinian detainee. Justin Bonomo, on X says that's insane framing. The man was anally gang raped. He was severely beaten and then anally gang raped on camera. Both a knife and a taser were reportedly used. There was a hole in his rectal wall he had to get surgery to fix. Because he was anally gang raped by the IDF on camera, he also had seven broken ribs and other injuries as well. After it happened, the Israelis staged multiple large protests in the streets, not because they believed the soldiers did anything wrong, but because they were infuriated that the soldiers were arrested for anally gang raping a Palestinian on camera. The protests were not just random people. They included multiple high-ranking Knesset members, their Congress, who defended the anal gang and the anal gang rapists. They didn't stop there. They went after the lawyer who leaked the video. She was publicly smeared and forced to resign and then was arrested. And now the anal gang rapists who were caught on camera have had their charges dropped. They didn't win in court. They weren't somehow exonerated. The charges were completely and indefensibly dropped. The Jerusalem Post reports that there was sufficient evidence to take this to trial. This is part of a larger pattern of torture and impunity. New York Times and many other major outlets have extensively detailed the abuses at the torture facility. New York Times reported that prisoners lose 30-plus pounds. A nurse was anally raped by a metal rod. Another man was raped by a dog. And another was anally raped by a fiery, burning rod until he died. Yes, the New York Times reported all of that. I'll share sources in the replies. Torture and sexual assault are commonplace at SDE Taman, or however you say this prison name, and many prisoners die in the process. The UN concluded that rape from IDF soldiers was so commonplace, it constitutes an official strategy of war. And of course, these monsters virtually never face jail time because Israelis, by and large, don't have any problem with any of this. It's just what their society does. They torture Palestinians. So this is the end result of this saga in which these soldiers were caught on camera doing this, then you had members of the Knesset protesting and demanding their release because what they did was a holy and allowed act because these people were accused terrorists after all. I mean, they'd never been given a trial, never been convicted. They weren't caught red-handed doing something, but they were Palestinians. So, you know, you might as well rape them to death and then get away with it. And then, by the way, they went on TV and were like celebrating. Like, this is one of the rapist guys right here. I don't know if we can go to my screen, or I just put the video in the folder. But yeah, they like celebrate these guys, like made them celebrities. The soldiers who raped the prisoners became celebrities and have now been exonerated thanks to the actions of the Israeli Knesset. So, greatest allies, right? Most moral army in the world, right? Israel, a bastion of Western values, or an insane colony of gang rapists and murderers.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up, go to the UN's own website, they admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this, that's where it put in the salt, IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger, pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. and I mix that with ultra-methylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel, so good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealexandershore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at thealexandershore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, thealexandershore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best. And it does so many other things, libido, stamina, energy, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexandershore.com, and I thank you for your support. Told Trump not to go to war with Iran because they'd done a lot of the war games, not just militarily, but economically, and said it would basically go from bad to worse. But Trump is the president. He's not a puppet. He does what he thinks is best, and he thinks Israel's right, and that somehow we would have some big, quick, magic victory. He was bolstered by Venezuela, which I was worried about. Venezuela's a totally different situation than Iran. Oil prices are up 11%. They're estimated by the major oil companies and consortiums to double within a month.
You saw prices surge 25%. Oil Brent nearing $120. And then there was an FT report just out in the last hour or so saying that G7 members will be meeting later today, early U.S. morning, to discuss a potential joint release of the strategic oil reserves. And then prices kind of tapered a bit. You're still above $100 a barrel, which is huge.
If the strait continues to be cut off, it is causing a cascading effect of the economy, and we've gone over the different economists' analysis. They all agree that a closure of the Strait of Hormuz for 3 months would more than double the price of oil and send shockwaves. It would take, even if it opened back up, many months to reverse. And if you got 6 months of oil prices being doubled, you pack that into the economy as the truest form of inflationary drive. And you get the entire Trump recovery plan 100% dead in the water and the U.S. bankrupt for sure. And a lot of people were like, look, Jones just now discovered that Israel controls U.S. foreign policy. No.
The deadline for attaining this goal is getting extremely close. And Iran, by the way, is also outpacing Iraq in the development of ballistic missile systems that they hope will reach the eastern seaboard of the United States.
They have meddled, and they've been trying to get us to go to full war with Iran for 40 years, and they didn't have full control, or it would have happened. Now, I'm saying now they do, and they're calling the shots. You cut and dry. That's the big demarcation line. The Secretary of State saying, oh, yeah, Israel did this, so we have to. It's that it's cut and dry. There's no debate about it.
Biden released the money, gave it to the mullahs. And the mullahs turned around and financed Hezbollah, Hamas, October 7th, the Houthis, and whatever other terror groups they could fund. That's what happened.
We got to talk about how we get back control of the country. So Trump's entire agenda to secure the dollar, get us out of the edge of bankruptcy, get tens of trillions of investment in, reindustrialize the country, stop World War III with Russia. His entire laudable agenda is in deep, deep trouble over the Iran situation. He was advised by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the majority of his advisors. The majority said, bare minimum, this is a major destabilizer, will massively jack up energy prices, and will cause a cascading effect. Don't do it. And Trump still did it. And the Strait of Hormuz is still shut down, and it's going to be shut down for a long time. Because the Iranians haven't even tried to block it completely yet. They just sunk a few ships. And now the U.S. says, we're going to escort you through. And they got a bunch of oil drilling rigs that have their own engines and their own systems, and they could just turn those on and send them right out and turn the motors off and deflate them, and they go to the bottom. And the U.S. can sit there and try to stop them while they do it, but the Iranians are suicidal. They'll just continue to do it. Maybe it takes them a few hours until it just, like Tetris, just piles up all the wreckage, and now it's shut. And now every time we try to go haul it out or dredge it out, they're going to be shooting at us. We'll be shooting at them, and then you know what's going to happen. We've got to send in troops just to secure the IRC headquarters. That's where that little tip sticking down from Iran, that peninsula, that's where the IRC headquarters is, right across from that tip, right on the other side of that island. They got all their bunkers and all their secret bunkers and all their spider holes and all their weapons, and they got trap doors with good old-fashioned artillery, heavily militarized on both sides, and all they got to do is roll it out, and they can sink whatever they want. So that's called putting yourself in checkmate. The entire world is racing into the fourth turning and the greatest quickening our species has seen in 10,000 years of recorded history. You know you're in a war, right? And it's a declared war. The globalists have declared war on Team Humanity. They've declared war on the God that made us. It is not incredible. It is not heroic. It is not amazing to fight this. It is survival. This is the priority. This is the real world. This is game time. This is the crossroads of human destiny right now. Right now. And I see a bunch of other people not realizing how desperate the situation is. We need maximum urgency. We're up against the most evil people the world's ever seen. Don't you understand that? I don't want anybody to go out and be physically violent. I want you to kill with truth. Kill with your will. Kill, kill, kill their lies.
Alex Jones lights the fuse, and Harrison Smith keeps it roaring. This is the War Room.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Third hour of the War Room is on. I'm going to open up the phone lines for your calls this hour about a specific topic. Sometimes I say we're only taking new callers. We're only taking old heads today. We're only taking classic info warriors. So I want to know what you think are the top InfoWars moments of all time. That's what I want you to call in and tell me. What are the most memorable or iconic moments in the history, the 30-year glorious history of this institution as we wind down, as a final execution date has been set? It's incumbent on us, sad it has to be this way, but we have to celebrate ourselves, you know? We were in a normal world, I dare to say, or if we were not who we are, there would be documentaries about us. There'd be like, because what Alex has achieved here is monumental. It's historic. It has actually changed the world forever. You would think that people would want to know about that. They'd want to know how it happened. They'd want to know the vicissitudes of the struggle to build up what has become a epoch-defining organization. And don't underestimate what InfoWars has done. I mean, I've shown you the clips, and these will have to be in the compilation, right? Things like the expert that was brought to testify during the Connecticut trial, who said, in her words, that in the run-up to 2016, Alex Jones was a bigger influence on the American electorate than Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck and his next three competitors combined. It's not us bragging. It's not us seeing our own impact as, you know, outsized because we're taking a subjective view. There are literal scientists and professors and engineers studying this stuff and bringing you the scientifically valid conclusion that InfoWars has changed the world forever. And you can't look at the modern political landscape and not see InfoWars plastered across the whole damn thing. Even Fox News has had to come around to where we're at in some way just to maintain bare legitimacy. But what has happened in this office and on the road from behind a bullhorn or in the halls of Congress has actually changed the world, has been historic, has been monumental, has been the type of things that they'll remember 1,000 years from now. And I used to say this more, but you know, when you look at history, things get compressed. Roman history is a great example of this, where in the Roman oral legends, they basically say this one guy created all this stuff. Now, in likelihood, you know, in all likelihood, maybe that guy existed. Maybe he invented some things. It would be like 1,000 years from now, you know, people look back in American history, and instead of remembering all the founding fathers, all the names that signed the U.S. Constitution, instead of remembering John Hancock and John Jay and 100 people, they say, well, Thomas Jefferson wrote it and George Washington was the president. And sort of they are the ones who did everything, right? It just gets compressed in that way. Naturally, that always happens in history. Well, if you look at this era of American history, probably the biggest story in all of it is the rise of Trump, which is not about Trump. It's about the changing cultural atmosphere, the rise of alternative media. I mean, all of this stuff represents like an epoch, like a real moment in time where people look back like the 1960s was, or they'll look back and say, this was a major change. It was driven by this engine, which was, you know, free speech and alternative media and independent people. And if you boil all of that down, you'll have one figure at the end of the day who represents all of it. It's Alex Jones. From MAHA and the health to, you know, the poisons in the food and water to vaccine program. I mean, Alex Jones laid the groundwork for all of this and blazed the way and blazed a trail, and then went from talking about the powers that be to being in direct hand-to-hand to the death combat with the very people that he was opposing, from, you know, the Austin community cable access channel only a few years before. So I don't think you can overstate this. I don't think you can talk about the success that we've had enough, especially, you know, as we do come to an end, as we won't be able to use these logos anymore. We won't be able to say Harrison Smith for Infowars.com. The name that was chanted at Hillary Clinton rallies and flew above the DNC on blimps and were written in the sky by fans across the country. You're not going to be able to buy t-shirts that say InfoWars anymore. You're not going to be able to get our stickers. I mean, now's the time, folks. Stock up while you can. These will be valuable collector's items in the very near future, because we are going down. And folks, I haven't even said the number out and we already have full calls. So we'll go out to those momentarily. And I'm going to keep a list going. I've got a document up here and I'm going to keep a list going of historic InfoWars moments. I only wrote down two because Darren McBreen and I were talking about this earlier today, and he put out a great edit of a rant I did on American Journal, where I was talking about the fact that Tucker Carlson and what he represents today and who he is today as the most powerful voice on the right, totally independent, breaking the mold, breaking out of Fox News, and yet bringing his credibility with him, and just the real, like, iconic transformation that Tucker's gone through. You can trace that directly back to Alex Jones. Tucker Carlson came and visited Alex Jones. I was talking to Darren about it, and he was telling me some behind the scenes stuff. And this is what I'm saying. We're going to have to do it. Nobody else will do it. We just got to do it ourselves. We're going to have to tell the stories and give you, you know, interview each other about behind the scenes stuff just so we can get it on record. But he was saying that, you know, he could tell, like, as Tucker Carlson was leaving, I don't want to tell the story for him. He's got to tell it himself, but it's stuff like that. But you take that and you trace it down. You go, you know, this little stone that Alex Jones threw in the river, I mean, the ripples have grown and grown and become this gigantic tidal wave where, like, the whole world is trying to take down Tucker Carlson because he listened to Alex Jones, understood what he was saying, followed the lines of logic, began to build his own, you know, network of conspiracy facts in his mind, and now has become, like, the number one challenger to the New World Order, second only maybe to Alex Jones. Getting Trump elected, obviously, massively important. Leading the Stop the Steal marches in the run-up to January 6th. I'm going to stop mentioning him because I want to give you guys a chance to tell us, but that was one I wrote down, was that Tucker Carlson visit. What a historic moment that turned out to be, folks. Same thing I'd say the interview with Trump, historic moment. Like, if you were going to make a documentary or a compilation, if you were going to share the most important moments of InfoWars history, what would they be? That's the question that we'll go to you to answer. Now I'm excited. Now I'm excited to go out to calls. I had all this other stuff planned, but people called in so quickly. I want to go to those. But I think I'll take at least a moment to play kind of a longer video from the UK, because the UK is being absolutely dismantled right in front of us in ways that are shocking, and I don't even have words to describe it, because so much stuff these days is shocking and unprecedented and insane. Like, okay, I'm sorry the English word doesn't have sufficient vocabulary to like actually express how things are just constantly ramping up. But they're getting rid of jury trials. They're getting rid of like all of these protections for normal people. I'm going to have to read some of these headlines, but at the end of the day, I think this all goes back to something I've been saying a little bit recently, which is like, we have not done a good enough job of educating people on the underlying reason for the values that we hold. In other words, it's not enough just to say in America we have jury trials. You have to explain why. It's not enough to say we have free speech. Free speech is good. You have to explain why it's good. You have to explain the value of the value, right? The purpose of it, the meaning of it, where it came from, why it's so important, why it's more important than other values like safety or comfort or not being offended. You know, like having guns, right? Being armed. It's not about hunting. It's not about sports. It's not about, but I like guns. Because having a gun is having dignity. And it's as simple as that. It's the mindset of your enemies you want to disarm. People you can't mess with are armed. It's a fundamental condition of being an American, that you are responsible for yourself, responsible for your own protection. And the powers that be are unable to persuade you. They're unable to coerce you or force you. They have to persuade you. They have to convince you. They have to respect you. And this is the same lesson that's being taught to nations in the Middle East right now. Why do you think they're trying to disarm Iran? Why do you think it's all about the ballistic missiles? The one lesson that should be beating us over the head is all of the guarantees you can get on paper mean nothing if you don't have the force to back it up. That's true on an individual level. So like these things that we just take for granted, we have to explain why they're valuable. And the video I'm about to show you is a man named Jeffrey Cox. And he's giving a speech to Parliament about the importance of jury trials. And everybody else in Parliament is giggling and laughing at him. And what he's delivering is an amazing speech. He is a very impressive orator. But occasionally you'll see it'll cut to the other MPs, and they literally are just sneering and laughing and mocking at him expressing the fundamental underlying values of Western society. It's so like disturbing to me. I don't know. I cannot believe how far the UK is falling. But they're getting rid of jury trials. And this man is standing up against it, and everybody else is too stupid to even understand what's happening. Let's watch.
Those who were oppressed, who were poor, who faced the full phalanx of the state, reigned against them. And it was this Secretary of State in a different guise who was their champion and their voice. And a jury trial is the most potent weapon and instrument against oppression, against injustice. And it serves not just those who are wealthy, but those who are poor. Not those who have a voice, but those who do not. It is 12 members of the jury who will give a hearing to people who have otherwise no hearing. I will not take interventions now, certainly if they're not of the, if they're of the quality that we're having up till now. The reality is, Madam Deputy Speaker, that the jury trial is the cornerstone of our justice system. Do away with it, and we are in trouble. Now let me say, look at the way in which this bill operates. It is to automatically presume jury trial for everything which will have a likely sentence of 3 years. Those will be some very grave offences. But in relation to serious and complex or lengthy cases, it could be any allegation. As long as a judge concludes it's appropriate that it should be dealt with without a jury. That could be, or apart from the excluded offences, which are, I accept, exist, but apart from the excluded offences, not just fraud trials, but all kinds of trials will be tried without a jury if a judge concludes it's appropriate. The moment you make jury trials subject to the view, the individual view of a judge as to whether it is appropriate or not, you drive a hole into this fundamental accepted right that all of us on each side of the House have accepted over so many years, which is that if you are accused of a serious crime, and a serious crime is one that could destroy your reputation, disqualify you from the House of Commons, wreck your professional reputation, loss of your employment like the postmasters and the mistresses, that you should be able to be judged by 12 people. There is a reason why summary justice is called summary. There is a reason why summary justice was always subject to a complete rehearing. Remember, the Honourable Lady spoke of how there was no right to jury trial. Of course there is no written right. There has always been an accepted consensus on both sides of this House and throughout the system of this country that jury trials are precious for those kinds of cases, particularly allegations of dishonesty. The right to elect is crucial. That is what this bill is undermining. That is what is so dangerous about it. And undermining it on the basis of what? Arbitrary rules and arbitrary divisions. 3 years. Why three? Why not next year four? Why not next year five? Why not extend it gradually, little by little, until you reduce? No, I am not giving way. Let me make clear now. I want to finish in a moment. The reality, Madam Deputy Speaker, is that jury trial is too precious a thing. We're faced with a question of principle here. Are the savings that the government claim will be made, contested, and based off by many expert analyses, including the profession, including the Institute of Government and others as well, based upon questionable assumptions, are they sufficient for us to abrogate so fundamental a principle, attracting so rarely in our institutional and political life almost universal assent across the political spectrum? Are they sufficient for us to take this highly unprecedented and questionable step? And I would submit, Madam Deputy Speaker, they are not. I would submit to the House that we should pause long and hard before we encroach upon this fundamental principle. I have seen it work in practice over 40 years. As I've said, I have never failed to be awe-inspired by the sheer quality of attention and fairness that a jury brings to its deliberations. Summary justice can never replicate that. We are about to take a step that will irretrievably damage the quality of justice in this country. You know, when you...
So again, just absolutely amazing oration from that member of parliament. It's almost like a flashback. It's like, oh, this is probably what it used to be like. Not just like screeching minorities trying to get the most money from the white people. It's just like principled, meaningful, powerful. And by the way, they do have magistrate trials in England. 40% of them are overturned. So, or at least I should say, of the appeals for magistrate decisions, summary judgments, 40% of the appeals were upheld last year in the UK. So they're doing away with jury trials, despite the fact that the current magistrates in their limited, you know, summary judgment activity gets it wrong almost half the time, according to the appeals court. So it's not about getting a better result. It's not about the jury trials being, you know, biased. Although, you know, the way things are going in America, jury trials are not reliable anymore because half the time they fill them up with leftists that let people go on the basis of their race or give people harsher punishment on the basis of their race. I mean, there was a story today, I think I have it, from the National Post talking about exactly that. But let's go to clip 31 here. This is Katie Lamb, lady sitting next to MP Cox right there, talking again about the importance of jury trials and the difference of outcomes between jury trials and summary judgments. Let's watch.
In judge-only cases at the magistrates' courts, free speech defences succeeded in just 16% of cases. In Crown Court cases, where juries very often sit, free speech defences succeeded in 28% of cases. There is a clear divergence between the public's appreciation of justice and the views of the judicial establishment. The result of this government's plans will be to further alienate the public and to drag the justice system further away from the views of the British people. If that's what they want, then they should at least be straightforward about it.
So do you understand what they just said there? Yeah, there's a story I was talking about. She just said that if the defendant uses free speech as a defense, it only works with the magistrate 16% of the time, much more likely to be effective on a jury. See, the judge doesn't give a damn about your freedom of speech. That's not even a concern for him. So using that's not going to help. But a jury of 12 of your peers, they understand the value of freedom of speech. They understand what it would be like for them to be sitting in that bench having said the wrong words, and they'll decide in your favor. That's why it's being removed. It's being removed because the English people will not convict their own brothers and sisters for being angry at the conditions created by the government. The jury or the judge will throw them in jail for that. And yeah, if y'all can bring up that that headline, this is, I believe, out of Canada. But it's being made official now and like being written into law that certain races get less jail time than other races. Literally. Man who murdered girlfriend gets reduced sentence partly due to his race. Everton Javon Downey stabbed his girlfriend, Melissa Blimke, 15 times in a stairwell at a shopping center in Burnaby, British Columbia in December 2021. And he has now had his sentence reduced specifically because he's not white and therefore, I guess, doesn't have agency and doesn't have control over his own actions and so can't be blamed for murder. It's insane, but that's an official mainstream media headline that is actual law in Canada. It's coming here if we're not careful. But back to the UK, not only are they getting rid of jury trials, they're getting rid of the House of Lords, the hereditary, lordship, the branch of their government and the house of their parliament that isn't voted on but is passed down with heredity. Is being done away with. Heredity peers to be removed from lords as bill passes. Will Tanner says this is absolutely awful. The peers are being abolished because they prove the central claim of egalitarian mass democracy false. Old World Show on X says, he quotes Clifford Doughty and says, with a minor gentry and a larger gentry, the gentry as a whole formed a political power that was to dominate the House of Commons. With their rise, it could be said, Spain is ruled by priests, France by kings, and England by gentlemen. No longer. The last real tie of what was England and Britain to the tradition and hierarchy that made it great has been severed. In its place now sits a monstrous, gray, stifling bureaucratic tyranny. So, and it's because they're white. It's because the people that ruled England were the people that were from England. They were white men, white families, and they passed that down hereditary in a hereditary fashion. Because they want to make England into a multicultural hellhole, by which I mean eradicate genocide and then destroy the memory of the people that once lived there, the white English Britons. So they're doing away with them systematically. They also are now, Reform UK has asked MI5, their version of the CIA, to vet political opponents. So no getting elected unless you're approved by the intelligence agencies.
My people perish for lack of knowledge. That's what the Bible tells us. Another way to say it is, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. God has given us compounds in nature that aren't just important, they're vital, they're essential. If you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you die. You don't have water for 4 or 5 days, you die. You don't have food for a month, you die. And why is that? Because there's nutrients in the food you need that are essential. Well, iodine is one of the essential nutrients. We have massive shortages of it in our depleted soils. Now, I have a new CIA declassified document I'm going to hit here in just a moment. But first, I want to show you a few headlines. UN study, 2 billion people suffer from vitamin mineral deficiencies, particularly iodine, the number one cause of cognitive disabilities in the world today. Here's another one. Salt smarts how iodine has increased America's IQs. Starting in the 20s, we had super low IQs like iodine. They put it in 15-20 point increase. My point is, this is a known fact. It just got declassified 2 weeks ago, CIA Operation Artichoke, in the 50s. They said, we've been tasked by the big tax-free foundations, the Rockefellers and Carnegies, to dumb down the American people. And we're going to put poisons in the food, the water, and the vaccines to dumb them down to make them more manageable. Absolutely incredible. So right here, ladies and gentlemen, I have taken a few drops of our new T3, even better than X2, pure atomic iodine, and mixed it with our medical-grade methylene blue. Both of these supercharge your cells, clean out your body, and counter the effects of the things now being admitted by the CIA. That fluoride calcifies the pineal gland and jackets your cells where they cannot transmit. Now, I've been telling you this for decades. So they have major studies, but now here it is. CIA declassified research. The human body is a liquid crystal that is literally transmitting and receiving a transceiver. And what does fluoride do? It literally blocks that. What goes in and strips that out? Iodine and methylene blue, they act in different ways. So this is information the bad guys not want you to know. Also in the CIA document, they admit that most cancer is microscopic worms. There's hundreds of species that get in and colonize your body, amoebas, and eat your breast, your liver, your brain, you name it. And then they call it a tumor and cancer when they're just areas of your body that have been chewed out. Now, you've seen us with countless doctors and scientists on talking about this. Not all cancer is this, but the majority of it from studies is, and they are again telling you that you just got to die. And if you've got an infection of parasites in your brain or whatever, if they hit it with radiation, it kills the parasites. But the radiation also kills your regular cells. Turns out the majority of people in the world have one form or another of parasite. Here's the Daily Mail. CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document. The potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. So we've talked about this for many, many years. We are totally vindicated again. And right now, we finally have the original pure iodine back, but even stronger, now known as T3. The original X2, but even better, at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, T3 and what it does for your body is amazing. So for a limited time, you can get T3, our new iodine, the very best ever, at thealexjonesstore.com. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds the operation. Total win-win. Now, methylene blue, you fill in 30 minutes on average. Iodine takes about 2 weeks to kick in to get the full effect. But it is just as amazing. You are insane if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get our ultra methylene blue and the new T3 that's even better than the next two. The same formula, but stronger. Exclusively available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you so much for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment, we go directly out to your phone calls. I've asked people to call in with their favorite memory or just what they would want to see included in some sort of compilation or, you know, scrapbook of the greatest historical moments in InfoWars history. I'm keeping notes. I'm keeping a tally as we go. Max in Wisconsin, you're up first. What is your favorite memory from InfoWars' long and storied existence?
Tricky question, you know, because it's like a compendium. Jones has been on for so long, you know, so there's so many things. You know, his 9/11 coverage was iconic. Obviously, as you see now, what's going on now with you guys, Sandy Hook saga was, you know, like a look behind the curtain, deep rabbit hole. You know, there's other stuff that, like, broke into the mainstream, like Piers Morgan. Oh, yeah. Or even like the gay frogs, like that just like what originally was like a joke and funny, and he was serious about it, and it spread like wildfire and became like a meme and everything, and ended up being truer than he was originally predicting and talking about. You know, I like the old school, you know, like smaller studio. It was like the deep cut underground stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That studio is the podcast studio. It's about 50 feet that way behind me. Thank you for the call, Max. That was a great list. You sort of hit the top ones. I want to give other people a chance to talk about it as well. But definitely Piers Morgan, classic, all-time great interview. Like maybe one of the, like the top 10 live television moments in history. Just fantastic. Gay Frogs, of course. I'll add the song. It was right around the same time that the Gay Frogs song went viral. It was the Somali song. That was another absolute classic, which, again, they try to humiliate Alex by making fun of him, and it just makes him 10 times more popular. I remember, well, okay. Tim in Seattle, you're up next. Thank you for the call, Max. Tim, you're on the air. Go ahead.
How's it going, Harrison? My favorite all-time moment with InfoWars and Alex is him at Congress to Sundar Pichai saying Google is evil.
Google is evil. Just, Google is evil. So good.
You know, he was so point blank in their face. I think that was the model for all of us to do. And so that was my inspiration, just getting right up in their face. So I think that was Alex's moment of moments.
Yeah, absolutely. And you remember it was that moment that we got kicked off Twitter, right? Or was it a different, it was that time, right? That's when he saw Oliver Darcy.
It was
a different time. We went to two hearings. I was there at both of them. I think I was probably filming some of this footage. We went twice. The second time was Sundar Pichai. There I am on the left. See me? The first time though was we were there for something else, right? And that was the time that,
it was the Senate hearing.
Well, no, there's a different one. Cause then we went to the Oliver Darcy was at the tech hearing is what I'm hearing in my ear. So, and he confronted him there, but that was the video that got us kicked off X. According to Jack Dorsey, it was bullying because he said he looked like a possum that crawled out of a dead cow's butt, which was accurate. Okay. But that was still the excuse they used. Oh, we'll have to get the timeline exactly right. But there were a couple visits to DC in quick succession. Google is evil is one of them. Oliver Darcy got us kicked off Twitter. I'm thinking that must have been before because then the big tech hearing happens. We're like in response to the censorship, right? Cause then we also went and stormed into the actual hearing. That was this trip. That was the first time we went. They didn't expect us and we stormed in, and it was the censorship hearing where like Ben Shapiro was testifying, even though he'd never been canceled on anything. And Alex Jones was sitting in the, there's Oliver Darcy. So this was the live stream that got us kicked off X. I was filming it, I'm proud to say. Fantastic. Google is evil. Oliver Darcy is a possum. Very good memory. Let's go to Jordan in New Jersey. Thank you so much for the suggestion, Tim. Jordan, you're on the air.
Hi, Harrison. Nice to speak to you again. I'm a longtime caller. Been listening or with Alex since 2003 about. For me, I've been a guest on the show. But for me, it's the Francis Boyle coming out on the forefront, basically very early in 2020, talking about the the Frankenshot, as he called it, and what was going to happen with COVID. And I would say that I did mine based on historical, significance more than greatest hits, and that the whole COVID thing was probably the premier aspect of InfoWars, and I think that's why they resurrected the whole Sandy Hook thing is because of InfoWars' work during COVID, of which I was involved, calling in all the time. I think that was one of the most historical things that InfoWars was about. I think they saved lives through that whole process. And I'll never forget it.
100%. Certainly, like, in the top three things I'm proud of, you know, for my work at InfoWars, I think, like, my report in front of the White House when we were in D.C. in either late January or very early February 2020, and I just laid out exactly how COVID would operate because I'd been listening to Alex, because InfoWars knew the play. And I do think we saved lives. I know we saved lives because I know a lot of people did not get the vaccine because we told them not to. And very proud of foreseeing that. You're absolutely right. Calling out COVID early on was a very powerful thing. It certainly didn't make us any friends, but just to clarify, the Sandy Hook operation, like, they tried to get it done before COVID. And I think that may have been part of the calculus, because if you remember, in 2016, 1 week after the election of President Trump was the first time that a mainstream or any media outlet connected Alex Jones to Sandy Hook. The first time, and it was all in relation to, why is Donald Trump hanging out with this guy that says Sandy Hook is fake? 1 week after the election, 1 week after we beat them, they all of a sudden decided that a story from 12 years earlier needed to be, you know, resurrected, or I guess 6 years earlier at that point, needed to be resurrected. And it was all about our effectiveness during 2016. They did not realize how powerful we were. Getting Donald Trump elected was their wake-up call, and they realized we got to shut this stuff down. And you remember, they expected Trump to lose anyway, and regardless, they were going to roll out and have this plan to roll out, quote-unquote, fake news. Remember, Trump didn't come up with fake news. They called him fake news, and he turned around and said, you are fake news, and it blew up in their face and became something that means the opposite of what they meant it to mean. But that was a strategy. That was a PSYOP campaign where they decided in the 2020 election, wow, these alternative news sites are a little too powerful. We need to come up with a phrase to discredit them so we can use the government to shut them down. They came up with the term fake news. Trump was able to stop that, but they started the Sandy Hook lawsuit a week after and kicked us off everything in 2018. Didn't work. It's never worked. None of them have ever worked. Let's go to VCMOB in Arizona. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, what's up, Harrison? How are you, man?
I'm doing good, thanks. How are you?
Good, good. Hey, I just wanted to one of my favorite moments is definitely the Piers Morgan, man. The 1776 will commence again. Like, dude, that is just all time. You can see that is all over the internet, no matter where you freaking look it up. It's just hilarious. And then also the best thing about Alex, man, it's not really a moment, but I mean, whenever he says something, he's like on the money. Mm. Like, we're gonna strike Iran on Friday night. You know, that's just one example of many times that I've, you know, relayed the info to my friend, my group of friends. They think I'm a damn psychic, man. They're just like, how did you know that? You know, and I say, you got to listen to Alex Jones, man.
He called the Russian war like almost to the day as well. And I'll never remember because like some people think it's like kind of silly when Alex, but like there really is something weird about that. If you remember on election night, I can't remember if it was 24 or 2020. I can't remember now, but Alex predicted to the minute when they would announce. Like, it was crazy. It was me and Owen and Alex, and we all guessed. And I think Owen and I guessed, like, oh, it'll be in an hour, it'll be in an hour. And Alex was just like, it'll be at 1:28. And it was to the minute what he predicted. I witnessed that with my own eyes. Like, that was uncanny. It was weird. It was very weird. And I thought me and Owen were completely off because we were like trying to logic it out. But like, no, Alex honestly does receive like weird transmissions like that where it's just like to the minute. They'll release it at 1:28 and it's like they release it. We look at the clock. It's 1:28. It's weird, but you can watch it happen live. Go back to the election night coverage. It's bizarre. Maybe there's nothing to it, but I think there's something to it. Great call. Thank you for that, VCMOB. Let's go to Mike in Connecticut now. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, I don't know if a lot of people remember this one, but back under the Obama era, Alex got a report from a base in Texas saying that they were moving a nuclear bomb that they didn't even know was there, and it was heading towards North Carolina. And then later that night, it was all over the news. Oh, terrorists might be sending in a nuclear bomb on a freight ship. And after that, it was crickets. And the next day, I was like, oh, I got him. I think he stopped a false flag nuclear attack. They're going to blow up a nuclear bomb off the coast of North Carolina.
Wow. And they were setting the stage for that. But then a caller called into Alex and basically blew the whistle on him.
Yeah, it was guys from the base.
I hadn't heard of that one. That's
because
awesome.
He's mentioned that a couple times. Yeah, yeah. And then the other thing, like visually, if you're going to put something like in a reel together, Alex Jones physically stopping human trafficking with his bare hands down at the border. These kids, they don't have seat belts, you know?
That's great.
That's what he did. He stopped human trafficking with his bare hands, you know?
What other news anchor does that, huh? What other, you know, talking head gets involved like that? That's why it's like, and again, this is why they hate us. This is why, in a way, their strategy to bankrupt us has been successful because, I mean, I was looking back at 2017, 2018, we went to New York like four times. We went to Washington, D.C. I mean, we were traveling all over the place. We were producing stuff. I mean, it was awesome. We had so much support from you guys, and we just poured it right back into the operation, and we were traveling everywhere and organizing marches and organizing resistance and doing all of that. And then the bankruptcy happened. They got control of our accounts, and we've basically been grounded since then, right? No flights since then. But man, that's why they hate us. That's always why they hate it. There are other people that have talked about this stuff. Maybe not to the level, the degree, and with the holistic attitude that Alex has, but there are other people that talked about it. We led marches. We told you to get involved. We didn't say, this is happening and go hide. This is happening. You better run to the woods and don't get involved. We said, go get elected. Go advocate for this. Go hold marches. Go make people aware of what's going on. You are the resistance. Total opposite of the QAnon psyop, right? Sit back and relax. Don't do anything. Everything's under control. Trust the plan. The polar opposite of the InfoWars strategy, the InfoWars motto, the InfoWars mindset that made us so dangerous, that makes us so dangerous. Telling you to get involved, reminding you that you're the ones in charge. It's your will that dictates the future, should you choose to assert it. That's what made us dangerous, makes us dangerous, and keeps us slated for destruction to this day, which is why I'm so excited to be starting something new. Because man, once the limiter gets taken off, you'll see the engine roar. Thanks for the call, Mike. Let's go to Cheeky in Washington State. Go ahead, Cheeky. You're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Harrison. I got to say, by far, like the top moment for me was when I watched Alex in 2016 when he was stumping for Trump, and he was supporting him, and he's like, you know, I'll support him, but if I see him ingratiating goblins or getting in bed with goblins, then, you know, I expect him to wade into the swamp and, you know, there's goblin slop and goblin vomit. I will never forget that clip. And it's been turned into so many different little musical bits on YouTube.
Yep.
And there was one other bit that he did that was just over the top. He looked like a possum crawling out of a cow. Mm-hmm. That was pretty nuts. But really, I think the best that you guys did was the "I'll eat your ass."
Those are good ones too. You know, it goes to show you how like really effective memes are. This is the dumbest thing to say, but like, you know, these moments. There are 10,000 of these moments. I mean, 10,000 rants of Alex Jones, right? Every day he's on air for 3 to 4 hours, 7 days a week. It's like, what makes 1 5-minute chunk of one show better or more special than 1 5-minute chunk of one other show? Sometimes it's just because somebody decided to take that 5-minute chunk and to re-edit it into a song and it goes viral, or, you know, clip it out. And in the case of the Somali song, like, you know, make it into a meme song and spread it that way. And it's like these little moments that otherwise would just be one of the 10,000 that we see on a daily basis. Instead, it becomes something like a cultural phenomenon. Instead, it becomes something that sticks in people's minds and they talk about forever and becomes defining of their character. Like, that's you. That's whoever made that video. That's, you know, Ping Trip or, you know, any of the other editors out there. Placeboing. This was a Placeboing one. And that's what separates it, makes it special and, you know, gets it in people's minds. it's a great rant. Don't get me wrong. But there's a lot of great rants. It's up to you to take it and do something creative with it and make it something beyond what it was before. Make it something culturally significant. And of course, it's Alex Jones embracing the meme culture and not shying away from it, not being, you know, embarrassed or offended by it, but being like, no, great. Make cartoons of me being a goblin. It's hilarious. I love it. Thank you so much for that cheeky in Washington State. You're right. The goblin rant is another classic. Let's go to Matt Baker on line one. Matt Baker, thank you for calling in from California. Sir, how are you?
Man, Harrison, I'm doing good. How many memories? So many memories. I mean, I'm a little partial to when I was in studio with you. That was probably my favorite memory. But I would say the Barton Springs jumping in during COVID, Alex ripping down the thing and then jumping in the pond. And
amazing.
That whole shebang. That was epic, and I wasn't there for that. But I was there for the reunion when I met you for the first time, and that did lead to me coming in the studio. I was thought it was interesting that you're talking about the predictions. Remember, there was also the Vegas shooting. He like called it to the hour. So I was like, probably 10 o'clock, you know, Vegas. I think it's like he totally called that. And then I don't know because I've been kind of in and out of listening. The whole concept of the false flag. Has anyone brought that one up yet?
That Alex Jones popularized the very concept of false flags. No, we haven't talked about that.
Every show, like I'll be listening to Suleiman Ahmed or whoever, and they're like, it's a false flag. This is a false flag. Everything's a false flag. Like, nobody ever said false flag before Alex. I mean, that altered the consciousness of humanity right there.
New World Order, globalist, false flag. I mean, there's a dictionary worth of vocabulary that originated with Alex Jones. You're exactly right.
Yeah, absolutely. We got Brandon Gray down there. He picks up the phone. I'm like, what are you doing over there?
Yeah, that's cool. Right.
You guys got him in the house now.
Oh, yeah. We're still growing. We're still moving around. We're still operating.
Hey, well, don't forget about your boy when you get, if you guys expand over there. You know, I could always put in some lift some work.
There's big things coming. I know you and Luke Sly Waker and, I mean, so many people in California. I mean, we really need like a San Diego, you know, office of InfoWars because you guys are doing it already. Like, we could at least be helping out. Of course, it'll have to be okay. The Alex Jones Network satellite office, I guess. But we do have some big plans, so fear not. Thank you so much for the call.
Some other guys come on. I don't want to hog your last minute, but I don't know. Is this the real deal this time?
I think, I don't know, man. As I do. I mean, we all joke about it at the office. It's like, well, we'll see, I guess. I think it's real this time. I almost in a way hope it's real this time. I'm sick of going through this. Obviously we don't want it to end, but I'm so excited to start something new. I really am. I really think it's going to be a big thing. And, I'm really excited for all of you to see what we're cooking up in the background. Thanks so much for the call, Matt Baker. Great as always. Let's go to Brad in Utah. Go ahead, Brad. You're on the air.
Well, thanks, Harrison. I've been looking forward to talking to you and appreciate your perspective on Israel. And, you know, we do operate on a herd mentality. And Alex has shaped the minds, and InfoWars has shaped the minds of those of us in the trenches. I appreciate the magazine that he put out.
Yep.
I remember the Sarnoff brothers,
Boston bombing.
Oh, the Boston Marathon. Yeah, and I could prove to people that it was a false flag. I appreciate what Matt just said. And there's so many callers that called in. I actually called in to mention about the Dr. Francis Boyle and the lives that I was able to save just around me. One of my good friends was in Walmart getting ready to get this shot. And, so I happened to call right then. Wow. That's how God works in our lives. And one of the things I've been wanting to mention to anybody I could call into was the Table 8 FBI, look up Connecticut, or FBI Table 8 Connecticut, and look up Newtown. And go to that column where it says murder and non-negligent manslaughter.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about, Brad. I would know nothing about that. Certainly looking into that table has never gotten us into trouble before. Yes, I think you'll find that we did cover that table when it came out, Brad. That was one of the key things that we got sued over. So not to cut you off, but I know exactly what you're talking about. Thank you so much for the call. I want to get to a few more. We got 4 minutes left in the show. Appreciate the call, Brad. Let's go to Inner City Rogue in Colorado. Thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hey, Harrison. Yeah, I'd like to just mention the Matt Drudge moment when back in 2016.
Matt Drudge.
Yeah, it's really important because had a really important moment just drop by unannounced kind of and just, you know, kind of a chilling message.
Yeah.
That was very blackmailing moment or should have been.
But very, like very prescient.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and very true. Like it was, I think, one of the only times Matt Drudge has ever been anywhere public. I mean, nobody even knew who this guy was, and he was here in studio, right over there, right by that door. An absolutely amazing moment. We have time for at least one more. We'll go one or two more calls. Michael in Tennessee has called in. Go ahead, Michael. You're on the air.
Hey, Harrison. I'm enjoying speaking to you. Thank you so much. My three top moments for InfoWars were like Bohemian Grove.
Of course.
And Bilderberg Group.
Of course.
And 9/11 Inside Job.
Yeah.
I mean, that just awakened the entire planet, I'm telling you. Just right there.
Woke me up, and that's for sure.
You know what else awakens the planet is the Survival Shield X2 iodine. I guess that's a different product now.
Well, it's same quality, just different label. Ours is actually a little bit better. But yes, the T3 trifecta iodine. So if you liked X2, you'll love the T3. It's very much the same thing, just a little bit of a better recipe, I guess. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison to take advantage of that. 50% off right now for VIP members. Absolutely, Michael.
It changes your life literally like in a day or two or something.
But sometimes it can take a little while to kick in, but it is an absolute powerful one. Thanks so much for the call. Sorry, running out of time here. Getting to the next. And by the way, I agree with all of these. I mean, I remember distinctly the first time I saw Alex Jones bullhorning Bohemian Grove when he's outside the hotel. And I'd reference it all the time because even when I first started working here and people would say, well, you know, you like Alex Jones. I'd say somebody needs to be out there literally telling these people, we are not your slaves. We are not for sale. We know what you're up to and we're going to stop you. Like, of course I love Alex Jones. Okay, it's not really my style. I'm not the type of guy to go bullhorn, but thank God there's somebody out there doing it. Thank God there's somebody out there speaking up for us and literally bullhorning these people. Can you imagine being a Bilderberg person? You think you're in total secrecy. You think you're meeting with all, and you just hear through the glass the voice of Alex Jones. We are not your slaves. We're not for sale. Like that, I can't even imagine what they thought about that. Meeting Paul Joseph Watson there when Bilderberg was in England. Amazing stuff. Last call, Sean in New York. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Captain Clown Car, Point for Duty, Harrison. So, yeah, I'd say probably the best time was the COVID pitch meeting at the water cooler that you did.
Yeah.
You know, between comedy and reality, a lot of times in the InfoWars world, it's kind of, you know, yelling, pushing, you know, hard, scary facts down your throat. And you, Harrison, bring a little light and levity to the situation, like a meme, creates the comedy and makes people think about, wow, I'm really looking at this wrong. And I would say a lot of people have woken up over the past 6 to 10 years, woken up where I believe that we're 50-50 now is more coerced as one, you know, as far as
I agree. I mean, you cannot overestimate the steps we have taken, the advances we have made for the cause of human liberty. And that's the thing. All of these moments are amazing. Put them in a compilation, it'd be funny, it'd be thrilling, it'd be iconic, of course. But what it represents is something really monumental and epic and amazing. A true underdog story of a regular American man who is now going toe-to-toe with the forces of evil. And none of it is possible without you, the InfoWars audience, every step of the way.
Has InfoWars not delivered? In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or, you know, in the arena, and he says, are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the InfoWar continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody, participating. Supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity, against the globalists, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried Ultramethylene Blue, or our bovine colostrum, or our CMOS, or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you should become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it recurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click in your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexjonesstore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet. Up to 40% off store-wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats. 10% off on things like the collectible knives. And up to 40% off on supplements like Ultramethylene Blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March Mega Sale right now, running until the 17th at thealexjonesstore.com. And be the reason we'll always stay on the air. Again, I salute you and thank you. Take action now.